Today's episode of Rob as a Podcast is sponsored by Blue Apron. Blue Apron is the number one fresh ingredient and recipe delivery service in the country. Of course, Blue Apron sends you all the ingredients to make great tasting gourmet meals in your own home. Nicole and I got our delivery from Blue Apron and it's downstairs right now. Blue Apron is affordable. For less than $10 a meal, Blue Apron delivers seasonal recipes with pre-portioned ingredients to make delicious home-cooked meals with a great variety. You could choose from new recipes each week or let Blue Apron's culinary team surprise you. Recipes are not repeated within a year, so you'll never get bored. Of course, they're flexible as well, where you can customize your recipes based on your preferences. Blue Apron has special delivery options, so you can choose what fits your needs, and there's no weekly commitment, so you only get deliveries when you want them. Each meal comes with a step-by-step, easy-to-follow recipe card and pre-portioned ingredients that can be prepared in 40 minutes or less. And Blue Apron's freshness guarantee promises every ingredient in your delivery comes ready to cook and they'll make it right. So check out this week's menu and get your first three meals for free with free shipping by going to blueapron.com/Rob. You'll love how good it feels and tastes to create incredible home-cooked meals with Blue Apron. So don't wait. That's blueapron.com/Rob. Blue Apron, a better way to cook. Coming to you live from my apartment, it's Rob Has a Podcast. And now here's the guy who's reinventing how the podcast is played, and usually at like 2x. Rob Cisternino, hello everybody, and welcome back to Rob Has a Podcast. And I'm very excited because we have a great guest here in the studio. We have a secret visitor. Who will it be? A returning player is back here. And the mystery is, it is the winner of Survivor, Karamoan, John Cochran.
Hello.
How are you doing, buddy?
I'm doing well. How are you? I'm thrilled to be back. I had so much fun last time. I'm sorry it's been 3 years.
It's been 3 years since I said last night that this was going to be your second time on the Recap Podcast. And I actually forgot we
did the
Survivor One World premiere. We got your takes on Troyzan 1.0.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. So we'll see how much your opinion has changed over the years.
I've chosen to forget, like much of America, I've chosen to forget the One World experience.
Yeah. So we have a lot to discuss. I think originally that we were talking about this date, you probably thought you were going to have a lot of free time because of the writer's strike.
Right. Yeah. But
I thought you were going to cancel after there was no writer's strike then.
Well, the biggest benefit is I just didn't want to have to be outside and holding a sign. So that was the biggest thrill about the strike not happening.
Yes. You would have had to go pick it.
Yeah, that's the big thing. You have to go to the studio lot and they give you a sign, a sunburn. It's humiliating. I don't want to deal with that stuff.
Right. May is not an ideal time to pick it in Los Angeles.
Walking around out here, when I was getting lost on the way to your house.
Yes, you got lost getting dropped off from your Uber.
I'm the only person that could somehow get lost in the process between getting out of an Uber and stepping into a driveway. We lost you,
but luckily we got you here and very happy to have you back. And it's been a really long trip to, I think that Dominic was born. Anthony wasn't born. A lot has changed. We haven't had you here in the studio. The last time I had you sit in a really tiny hot room.
This is a beautiful, I've never seen the studio in person. It's gorgeous. Are you a big audiophile? This is all such fancy equipment.
Well, this is what all I do. This is really it. I'm really just taking this one thing and working on it, the only thing.
You carved out an empire. It's an empire.
I'm sure that you have a lot of fancy writing equipment.
No, I have nothing. I have a few pencils and some tattered sheets of paper.
Yes.
That's it.
Okay.
And I have no food in my apartment. The only thing I've eaten in the last 2 days, I had some Kit Kat bars and pudding.
Kit Kat bars and pudding.
I don't even like Kit Kat bars.
Yeah. So why did you have them?
Because I have no food in my apartment and I was too late. I didn't feel like having to talk to a delivery person. So I was okay, I'll just eat.
Right.
So this is full disclosure. I don't know why I'm sharing. This is slightly embarrassing. I had deviated septum surgery a week ago.
Yeah.
Which, if you're not familiar with it. So first off, it's the thing that people get. Sorry, I just touched something. It's the thing people get when they actually are getting a nose job. They say they're getting their deviated septum fixed.
Right.
I legitimately just got my septum fixed. My mom said I should have gotten a nose job too, but I did not. But the problem is I can't breathe in bed.
Right.
If I'm lying on my left side, I legitimately can't breathe. I have to contort my face in this disgusting grimace.
Yeah.
Which I imagine is not an aphrodisiac.
Yes.
So I've gotten that taken care of, although it transitioned immediately into having a cold. So now I'm like congested.
Is it related because you had the surgery that you ended up being susceptible?
That it opened the floodgates kind of, maybe. Yeah. Maybe I'm more aware of all, because I think it was used to be packed up there. And right. Now it's like just, it's all, this is disgusting. Why am I disgusting? Talking about like bodily fluids leaving my body.
I think that the Survivor fan is right. I mean, there's all sorts of things that go on Survivor. I think that they're probably accustomed to it. Like, you know, having a cold is the least of any Survivor. They've seen it all.
That's true. I was hoping that after the surgery that I'd have like this like sultry Barry White voice.
Maybe you will.
No, I clearly do not.
You are, well, eventually maybe.
I don't think it works that way. I think this is as good as it gets for me.
Okay. Well, really excited to have you back. And it was a really interesting episode of Survivor and really a lot of stuff going on with Andrea, who I know is a good friend of yours and somebody that you played with back in Survivor, Survivor Karamoan. You know, I'm really starting to feel stupid about something that I did before everybody left for Survivor Game Changers.
Yeah.
I went to, I appeared as a guest on the show that Andrea does before the not the show she does now, but still the show she does now, but the show she does in the morning.
Okay.
And she would have like guests in to talk to like, and do the exit interviews. And so I saw her a couple of weeks before Game Changers, like when they were first like rumored to be Game Changers. And I saw her and I said, Andrea, what are you doing? Why go back? Why would you go back? This is a bad idea, Andrea. I said to you that this is not good.
Yeah.
That you probably aren't going to do good.
Wait, why would you think that? Why would you think she's not going
to
do well?
I really thought that people were going to be gun shy about her coming out of Karamoan. I thought, especially after the whole kerfuffle with the wine and cheese and Francesca, and that whole incident.
Yeah.
And then I thought that people were going to look at her as, again, she was good in the challenges, but she plays the game too hard. She's schemey.
Right.
And I really felt like that. I didn't see this going great for Andrea. I said, you got a great job.
I agree with that.
You're 6 months away from never having to talk to me again. You're almost there. You're close too. You're backsliding.
Right.
You were right there. And that's the ultimate sign of success. Yeah. When somebody is like, they don't have to talk to me, then right. that's
I chose to talk with her. I enjoy this.
Yes.
Rob. This is not an obligation.
Good. Well, I appreciate it. But I said to her, and now I feel really stupid because now she's got like gone really far.
She's crossed the 100 day threshold. Is she like, we can talk about this later. I don't know if you have a structure to all this, but like, can we say she's a legend now? Is she a Survivor legend?
Is Andrea a Survivor legend? I mean, I think that in the broadest term, she is. Like, if there was a Survivor legend season, you could bring her back and nobody would bat an eye, especially after we do, like, Game Changers and, what you know, we just bring back whoever. In my mind, I would say a legend would have to be somebody who's sort of like a top 10 sort of player. I don't think, if she wins this season, sure. You know, if she makes it even to the finals, I'll get into it. But as of right now, I would say she's probably on the outside of legend status looking in.
Among three-time players, who would you say she is, her closest equivalent? Is she like a Candace type?
Or no,
is
she's better than Candace.
An Amanda Kimmel type? Or because the 100-day thing is a big deal. Her batting average, she's doing over 30 days on average, which is crazy.
Yeah, I do think that Amanda is an interesting parallel, but I think that Amanda has higher highs.
Right.
Like Amanda has two finals appearances. Andrea, like, what is her biggest moment in the history of Survivor? I feel like that she's missing the iconic moment.
I think saying see you never was probably her, her greatest moment.
I mean, there's nothing that super
when she smeared
out.
Chocolate cake on her face. That was pretty legendary.
Yeah. Does she have a catchphrase?
Yeah.
Not really.
Well, I have so much to talk about with catchphrases and stuff. I have a lot strong feelings about social media presence and Survivor behavior. Like, I have this kind of big theories about stuff. I don't know if this is going to be conversational. I don't know what I'm doing.
Yeah.
I'm panicking right now.
That's fine. You know, we're not going like, that's why people get on me sometimes. They're like, you call this a recap and you're not really recapping.
Do people want
a
recap?
Episode. No. I have a great guest. I do have a legend here in the studio.
Okay, you're nice.
And I would love to pick your brain. I talked for an hour last night recapping everything that went on with Stephen Fishback. That's all.
What do you consider a good episode? I mean, I'm not saying name it. a contestant, but like what makes a good episode of Rob as a Podcast for you?
I think that where we have a lot of laughs, okay. I think we have some moments, we sort of like learn stuff about you. We have some thought-provoking conversation about the game. I don't think that necessarily breaking down every single possible scenario, unless it's something that's super interesting, ends up being something that sticks with you a week later.
Do you feel like your preferences in a good episode align with what your listeners like? Or do you like, they have their thing and you know what they like, and you're like, no, privately, I like the Dan Limbo exit interview and that's my high point or something.
Yeah, I think I know. I mean, I know what I get feedback from, and I know what over, you know, I've been doing this for 7 years. So I know the kinds of things that sort of like have stood the test of time and that people will still remember a year from now, as opposed to something that was just sort of like, you know, just they listened to it, it was fine, and then it's forgettable, you know, in a couple of days. I do like try to think of things. And I do think that first podcast that we did, I think we had a lot of things from that. It was, first off, it was a great episode.
You're saying the second time we did it.
The second time. Sorry. So the first time was maybe one of those.
Unremarkable.
But certainly the second podcast that we did, that's the one that has stood the test of time.
Well, the stars aligned. That was also the final episode of Kaguya.
It was the final five.
The last one before the finale.
So you had a lot of really amazing things happening. You had a big move from Tony to vote out Trish. And then you had all the stuff with Talking Llama. I had a lot of fun also in that episode. Then Nicole did the voicemails with me and we played the llama clip a million times. And that was really fun. I'll post a link to that in the show notes. And then if you want to listen to it, if you're listening to the podcast right now, go to robisthewebsite.com/Cochran2014.
Oh my God. I didn't realize I had my own like little shortcut.
Well, I'll make it after the podcast. Oh, okay. It's not done yet. So I'll do that if you want to listen to that podcast.
For people that are listening, I said this to you, Rob, earlier. I like completely predicted Tony's return appearance in that podcast appearance. I said he was going to come back with a new bag of tricks. It was going to be an exaggerated, caricatured version of himself. It was going to be trying to like relive his glory days. It was going to be an upsetting return. I still love him. I think he's a top three character, maybe my favorite winner of all time.
Yeah.
But I predicted it.
You also predicted Wu was going to win that season. You know, just if we're going to like full disclosure, you also made a strong case as Wu as the winner of Survivor Kaguya.
I still think that was a good choice. I'm not off the Wu train yet.
You really talked me into it. You're making some sense about Wu.
Well, nobody could have predicted what happened, what transpired.
Yeah. Okay. So you had a lot of theories. You had like one sort of unified theory of Survivor and social media that you were going to present.
Well, now you're putting so much pressure on. I want to talk about, are we getting into that right now?
Yes, because I think that this is a fascinating subject to get in, especially with you. I wrote up a article after the Karamoan finale when you had said, what's it like to be a sex symbol was the question.
From Four Grays.
Yes, with the Z. And then you said, well, I don't know, but you can follow me on Twitter. And then you got, you know, it was crazy. Yeah, it was a huge moment.
And people have tried to replicate that without success.
It's not gone well.
Lightning is not, I mean, Aris bungled it. I forget who else. Hayden, I think, tried to do it.
Yeah, it has not gone well. So, but you did it perfectly. All right. So here we are talking about Survivor and social media.
All right. God, now this is which I thought it was going to come up more organically. But so I think the thing I've noticed in recent years, so to contextualize it, first off, this is going to sound like I'm complaining about stuff, but this is coming from the person who, like you said, name dropped his Twitter on the show. So this is more like kind of an anthropological fascination I have instead of some condemnatory thing. So to contextualize it, like when I first played Survivor with Coach, and I think I've told this story before, he would sometimes say an especially profound phrase or an incisive line, and he'd turn to me and would say, just so you know, that's going to be the title of this episode. So there was like an awareness. He's like, there was one time where he said, like, right now you are the most powerful man in the game, Cochran. And he said, the most powerful man in the game is going to be the title of this episode, just so you know. And like, it was like an awareness of the show.
That's very meta for 23.
I think resonated with me. I think it probably influenced me in ways I was not aware at the time. And then I think it shifted to Twitter stuff. You saw hashtags, Steven mentioning the hashtag, like with the gastrointestinal thing, you can hashtag that. Even last night, Troy Zan did it.
I think as early as back in Survivor San Juan del Sur, I think even Wes Nail coined the phrase hashtag blindside, talking about a vote that was coming up.
So now I feel like we're entering a new era, and maybe you're going to think I'm a lunatic for thinking this, but I think people are trying to create gifable moments now, I think is something that's been happening.
Who is the first Survivor that you think is playing for
If you want to go back, so I first noticed it. This is going to seem like a lunatic that I'm like staying up at night thinking about this, which I am. But like Kelly Wentworth, Who first off, so first off, I'll say that like Kelly Wentworth, if you're complaining about people who get brought back for certain seasons, she's evidence of sometimes there are people that were not super stand on their first season and they come back and they blow away all expectations and emerge as, you know, a legend or whatever word you want to use. So, but for her, I don't remember what the context of the interview was, but there was one in particular where she was doing like a kicking motion.
Yes.
Like kind of a get off me dog sort of thing. Like she's kicking away.
Right.
Like
I think it was about Terry. Like get out, okay, Terry, get out.
And like I've done, and it was a delightful thing to watch, but I've done those interviews. You've done those interviews. That's a weird thing to, it's a very unnatural motion to do because you're basically talking to somebody that's like one of the guards outside Buckingham Palace. Mm-hmm. You're not talking to somebody who's flailing their arms around and doing animated stuff. It's kind of very clinical. And she was doing this very animated stuff that I think was kind of like a, oh, this will look very cute on Tumblr. I don't know. Maybe I'm crazy.
See, I think that that's probably too early. I do think that you're right. I think you identified the right person in that. I think that she was probably the first person that she had a lot of those moments. But I don't know if
I think it was intentional. I think it's intentional.
I'm trying to think. So they filmed that season, what, 2 years ago? I'm not sure necessarily. You know, they did a lot of campaigning coming into that season.
Yeah.
And so that she would have been maybe hyper aware that those things exist and those are good things to sort of tweet out. But I do think that a lot of people saw her and maybe she's inspired more people. I'm not ready to say I think
some
that
of
she
these
was,
facial reactions. There was, I forget what tribal council was, but there was one where she made these facial reactions that were not what people do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I'm, again, does it sound like I'm bad mouthing? Because I actually love her. She's one of my favorite recent contestants. I'm just very interested from the – because look, again, I'm the person that said my Twitter handle. And I did some goofy stuff. I kissed my fingertips and stuff. But that was actually an inside joke with a friend. I have noticed on this season there's been more kissing, blowing kisses to the camera, kissing people at tribal council. The undisputed – is it undisputed or indisputed? Undisputed.
Undisputed.
Undisputed queen of this season in terms of giftable moments. You have to know
Aubrey.
Who I'm gonna say. Oh, no.
No, who?
Well, that's – I think the coleslaw thing actually – the coleslaw – coleslaw callback. Oh my God, that's like a freaking impossible phrase to say. I think that was a kind of intentional thing. Michaela.
Michaela is very good. But again, I don't know. Is Michaela intentional?
Oh my God. Yes. Like, yes. So like, look, the thing of her, so the taking tea out and sipping it during tribal council, that's a very performative action.
But I agree with that. But was she going for a gift there?
Yes. And then in addition to that, there was one where she was eating coconut. That was a classic take on the I'm eating popcorn because something funny is about to happen.
Right.
I forget what it is. There's like one that's like Michael Jackson in Thriller. I think there's one of Kristen Bell maybe eating popcorn or something.
Yeah.
I think it was and she's very social media savvy. She has an internet show. She knows what resonates with the internet crowd. I think it's just a young person thing. I mean, Troy Zan's behind in the times. He's making a stupid Twitter reference last night. That's like, get with the times, old man. But like, I think GIFs are the new thing because that's what goes viral now. It's less like hashtag, you know, blindside and more, I don't know, saying coleslaw again, which I loved. I love Aubrey. So
I don't have a hot take on this. I'm just trying to process everything that you're telling me.
Do you think I'm crazy?
I think that maybe it's a little more organic than you're giving it credit for. Like, I don't know necessarily how calculated some of these players are to say.
They're
like,
waiting to do it at tribal council, which is the most theatrical moment of the episode. They're not doing it around camp. They're doing it when they're doing a voting confessional, which, as you know, for coming from the Casey Kasem guy, that's a time where you kind of are like, okay, this is my moment.
How old is that to like, how many steps back?
But that was not a gifable thing. That's when people talk. It was in sound bites and kind of little clips and stuff, because that might be shown on Access Hollywood. That's not the reality now. Now the reality is, will a thing go viral on Tumblr or become a GIF that's built into Giphy on, you know, social? I think I am right about this.
Okay, I'm not taking it away from you. I think this is really interesting. I can't wait to hear what people have to say about it.
Yeah.
You know, I don't follow Michaela super close in terms of like what she's putting out there. I do see that Aubrey a lot of times will send out those moments on her social media.
I don't think hers are Aubrey. I think she's being authentic. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying that it's inauthentic, but I think I like it. I actually like it. I think it's the next development of like social media awareness, because that's the world we're living in now. So I get a kick out of it. I'm trying to think of other examples.
But with the Michaela thing, that I feel like that while I don't think that she's necessarily doing all of that intentionally for a GIF, I think she feels like it's a TV moment where her whole thing is that she has these emotional reactions to things that she can't necessarily control.
Yeah.
And you, as a person who, you know, are very cerebral, you could think about, okay, I'll say this will be a moment. I'm not sure necessarily if she can compartmentalize, okay, I'm going to do this, and then
you're not 10
months from now,
she is,
this is going to be a social media moment that people are going to use in, you know, sending out tweets that they're
going to
stuff.
You're not giving her enough credit. She is capable of controlling whether she brings props to tribal council.
Yes, but is she thinking about it that that's going to be a thing on Twitter in 10 months?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's my theory.
Okay. Well, that it would be interesting to sort of like find out, you know, some of these answers.
Nobody's ever going to admit to it as the thing, though.
Yeah. But
so this is going to be, this is a dead end. I don't know why I brought it up. This is never going
to
be
but
proven.
But you're admitting to saying stuff then. And
yeah. Although, I mean, I admit, well, like mine was very explicit saying, follow me on Twitter. I did not say things like that. Oh, this will go viral. I don't think. Mm. I think I said stuff intentionally to be funny.
Yeah.
But it was less a social media and more like, oh, this is Survivor and I'm going to be funny on Survivor maybe.
Yeah.
I don't know. I find it fascinating. So social media stuff in general, I find I think we talked about it last time, like the social media behavior. I think there's been more this season with like Sierra. I to do my homework this morning, I was looking at different people's Instagram accounts and like Sierra posted like a video where she was addressing the fans, I think clarifying.
What did she say?
I actually did not listen to it.
Okay. But she like does like a press conference on
Instagram?
Yeah,
yeah. I listened to a 10 minute video or something. I'm like, or I don't know, maybe it wasn't that long, but it was like a weirdly long video for Instagram and I don't have the patience for it. But I think it was like clarifying, like, I know some of you are upset with some decisions I made, blah, blah, blah. And I think Michaela's doing the same with her thing. Andrea obviously hosts a show where she probably gets to kind of clarify her end of things. I think there's more direct engagement with fans. I'm curious whether you think that's a good thing or a bad thing. Because like if you go back to the old days, something I liked about the early seasons is that you're able to maintain the illusion or the delusion that the people are still on the island. You know, like I would watch the show. I knew they weren't really, but you never heard from them. There was kind of these mysterious people that were partaking in this experiment. Now it's like, oh, I get to see them playing shuffleboard together or like, or they're going to the beach and they're hanging out. It's like, oh, this is kind of, it's weird.
What do you
process.
Mean, like what, when we announce the cast before?
Or it's like during the season, it'll be like, you'll see two of the contestants being like, love my, I don't even know the tribe names, Muka Muka, friend for life. Muka Muka is probably not a tribe, right?
So you're saying that the people hanging out during the season, we're seeing them on social media.
I feel like it perverts it slightly for me.
I hear you, and I agree with what you're saying. And again,
do I sound like a complaining old man?
You're very Andy Rooney today. You know, it used to be back in my day, but I agree with you. I think that the best season that we had for this stuff was back in Survivor. San Juan del Sur, coming out of everything going on with Tony and his sleepovers and Spencer and Cass and every all this fighting.
Yeah.
And so San Juan del Sur, that was the social media shutdown season.
Right.
And guess what? Nobody was spoiled. Nobody knew what was going to go on. It was an exciting season that Natalie won. Nobody saw it coming. And that was great. And then that was followed by Dirty 30. We swung all the way back the other way.
Yeah.
And then it was like, you know,
one step forward, a million steps back.
Right. And so, you know, I don't like the idea that, you know, the players are allowed to sort of like, you know, have press conferences and stuff like that on Twitter and like, you know, say, actually, so what I was really thinking in this episode was this, because then the players, I think, with all due respect, are not necessarily savvy enough to know what's a spoiler, what's not.
And
you know, there's times in my exit interviews over the course of 7 years where a player will say something and I'll also like, I didn't like how that sounded. That sounded. And going back to earlier this season, when I interviewed JT and I did the exit interview with JT, and he's talking about he was implying like people should have listened to him, and he is like is Sandra gonna wish that she listened to me and
It's like it's so easy to be the oracle when all this happened 10 months ago. Like you're predicting something that happened a year ago. Like congratulations, you're great prescience.
Yeah, and I'll cut that part out.
Oh, you cut
know.
It out?
Okay. I cut it out. That you know, I used to say, okay, they said it to me on the call. Brad Culpepper, in the original time I talked to him in Survivor Blood Water, he was like, you know, did the moves I made, are those going to help Monica this season? I don't know. We'll see. We'll see. And I sort of like did a disclaimer at the top. I'm like, I think that Brad is kind of a little spoilery here.
Yeah.
So if you're really spoiler averse, don't listen to this. Now I'll cut that out. But I just think that it goes to the people that are the players don't necessarily know what's a spoiler and what's not.
Well, and it's, I think a big part of it is that, and I'd love to talk to like Sandra about this actually, because I think the pre-social media age, you were not getting all this feedback. I mean, you can speak to this too. Like you were not getting this influx of people saying, why'd you do that? Why'd you do this? And like,
right.
So you feel the need now to kind of speak up for yourself and defend yourself. Whereas in the old days, it's kind of like maybe a TV station's talking about it, but it's not this huge inundation or this flood of feedback that you feel obligated to address. Like, I'm curious whether somebody like Sandra, who her first two times playing, there was really no social media to speak of. It had to be difficult for this. I mean, actually, I think this season, we can talk about Sandra too. I don't know if we talk retrospectively. I think this season cemented her legacy better than anything else.
Absolutely, yeah.
But I'm wondering whether she had a hard time. Like, this is her first time dealing with people possibly saying mean things to her on Twitter, and whether that made the experience more or worse, or better or worse for her.
It used to be, in the beginning of Survivor, people would talk bad and talk about you.
Yeah.
Now, people talk bad and talk to you.
Right, yeah.
And they say, like, hey, like, you idiot. Why did you do this?
Well,
like, my favorite person. And it's not just Survivor, you know, that I feel bad for people like Unscripted shows where this happens. Where I read that, like, Eugene from The Walking Dead had to leave Twitter because people are mad at him about stuff that's going on The Walking Dead.
Well, I was talking to another Survivor about this, about the getting feedback on social media. And look, I know that this is all with the preface of we sign up for a reality show, so you are completely voluntarily like submitting yourself to feedback, both positive and negative. But humans are, I think this was her language, so I wouldn't give her credit for it, but like humans are not designed to withstand that level of constant scrutiny. It's a very weird experience. Like for me, if in high school, if I found out that one kid was bad-mouthing me in the entire school, that would ruin my week.
Yeah.
That are like multiple weeks and probably cause lots of self-assessment and introspection and reconsidering who I am. When you're on a reality show, just by virtue of having signed up for it, you have to deal with the reality of like, oh, now I'm getting like that sort of message by the thousands and just like kind of learn to block it out. But it's a weird adapting process you have to go through. It's very unnatural and very weird.
Yeah. It is interesting. I can only relate to it from the podcast.
Yeah, yeah.
But for the most part, I would say that I do get some negative criticism, but I really get much more positive feedback.
People are actively seeking you out. Whereas like if you're on a show that people are otherwise watching, but they don't like you, they feel like they're being burdened with your presence.
Right.
People
it's like, I love Survivor, but I hate you.
Yeah,
Nobody is like, I love Rob as a podcast, but I hate Rob on it. I watch it for the other people.
Right,
and it's probably, I'll get that message now. But let's talk about the game a little bit
before
I start getting overwhelmed with the negative feedback.
Sorry about that. Have I been just a depressing,
angry person? I think this is fascinating, and I'm hoping that the audience is coming along with us for the journey.
God, this means it's not the case. You're changing the subject. That suggests that you do not agree with what I've been saying.
No, let's talk about the episode a little bit.
Okay.
And then we can go wherever you want.
Right.
But Steven and I were talking about this last night in terms of this move that Andrea made. And it was a frustrating situation to sort of analyze because I think we both said, yeah, we like this move, but big picture, there's a lot of problems for Andrea and Suri that they may not know about.
Yeah. Well, I totally, like, from Andrea's perspective, I completely get the move. I feel like, I can understand the thing of you're moving against your alliance too early or whatever, but, like, if you know that somebody is absolutely targeting you very, very soon, I completely get why she would want him gone immediately. So I think it's a testament to Andrea's gameplay that she was able to get everybody else in her alliance on board with it, because that's where I'm kind of confused. Like, I don't get why. Why was there not more protesting of like, can we maybe wait until next time? Or I don't know. I'm just surprised that Suri and all the rest went along with it.
Do you think that she should be and Suri should be doing more to bring the Brad side and the Sierra side into the fold on this, where they sort of did a weird thing where they voted out Zeke, who was with them, and then they sort of sent Sierra, Brad, and Troy in on like a wild goose chase of, okay, put your votes tonight on Ty. We're going after Ty. So they, you know, did something that was good for them where we're not going after you guys, but they gave them bad info. Do you think it would have made more sense to try to get those guys on the side of, hey, let's vote out Zeke? Or is that too dangerous? Because then they go to Zeke and they say, hey, Zeke, guess what? Andrea's coming for you on this vote. Come with us. Let's all vote out Andrea.
Yeah, well, I think that latter situation, I mean, especially given that that other side has like 10 million advantages and idols and vote steals and everything. Like, I feel like I think that maybe the unintended, or whether it was intended or not, I don't know, consequence of their vote is that now maybe Ty will actually shift over to their side, because he's very aware, like, wow, three people from my own alliance, really, guys? Like, you're voting me out? So maybe the fact that he should be super aware that he's on the bottom of that group, instead of winning over Brad and Sierra, maybe they won over tie. You can't win over everybody in the game. Like, what? That would be an unsustainable thing to be like, okay, Brad, Sierra, you're with us now. So now everybody's together in one giant alliance. And like, I don't know. I understand it from that standpoint. I guess, I don't know. What do you think? Do you think that they should have looped them in?
You know, it's really hard to figure because they did the right thing to take care of the threat. And I was really watching how they approached Sarah, and they didn't steamroll Sarah. It looked like Suri really put in the work to try to get her on board plan.
I just don't get how that happened. Like, I'm just shocked. They didn't steamroll, so they must have all been on board with it. But I think it was a good move in that anything that exposes fractures in another alliance, which I think happened with this tie getting votes and stuff, is a good thing for Andrea's alliance. So there's going to be, you know, they're going to get back to camp. Ty, if he is thinking about it, will probably go to Brad and Sierra and be like, what the hell was that?
Mm-hmm.
And there'll be maybe fighting between them. Although, I don't know, the preview for next week made it seem like they're all freaking peachy and it's going to be back to a...
Yeah, the loved ones visit. I mean, loved ones visit puts a lot of spackle on everything for a day or so. Maybe not in your season. Maybe not in Karamoan, which I think, in my mind, the best loved ones visit of all time.
Oh, really? Because of the
drama that ensues. I think that's really... that's probably the best loved ones visit episode.
Yeah, I liked when Lisa Welch was saying brother.
Brother.
My favorite thing.
Yeah. So just to go back to Andrea, Stephen and I...
Let's talk all about Andrea. I have plenty to say about
Andrea. Okay, great. Stephen and I were talking about how we thought it was odd that she was really on Zeke for talking with Brad Culpepper. And she said, he's supposed to be a Survivor superfan. Yeah. Doesn't he know you're not supposed to talk to people from the other side? And we said, boy, this really does remind us of when Andrea was coming up in Survivor Redemption Island. Boston Rob was, we're not talking to anybody.
Buddy system. Over there,
have a buddy system. But I think that in some ways, this vote to me reminded me of back in Survivor Redemption Island when Matt Elrod came back into the game, and you had a situation where I think there was, six people from Ometepe, and then five Zapatera, and then he could have been the swing vote. And so what does Rob ultimately end up doing? He's like, okay, here's this guy who's with us, but he could be a number that could go the other side. They get rid of the swing vote and they go down to that one person advantage, and then they are able to run that down the rest of the way. I just wonder how much does seeing something like that influence Andrea as a young player coming up to like, okay, actually, so here's what you do. Even if you have a numerical advantage, cut that part out and then just rub out the other side and then get it down to six.
Yeah, there is the theory that like people returning players base their games on the games of the winner that they previously played with. I'm curious whether there was that level of intentionality in Andrea's decision making. I kind of wonder whether, like, that scene where she was like angry at Zeke for talking about football with Brad, I interpreted that more as like Andrea is very angry at Zeke and upset with him and will interpret anything he does in a negative way. So if he had like offered
that
her
was
food,
her taking after you.
What do you mean?
No, that she was just getting very negative.
Oh my god, is that my reputation? No. I'm just the Statler and Waldorf of the Survivor community.
No,
but I think like had he offered her food, she would have been like, the audacity of Zeke to offer me food. You know, you never do that. You know, that's my guess.
She was really mad.
There might have been the benefit of that. It happened to kind of
Last week, she had said, "Oh, he just see that that nobody was giving him attention. That's why he had to make this move."
I think she was angry at him for a good reason, and he was targeting her, and that probably made her doubly, triply angry.
Yeah.
And she wanted to get rid of him. I mean, my memory of playing with Andrea, if we can talk about more broadly, I mean, I think she's playing a fantastic game. I think this is by far the best game she's played, because she's probably one of the most well-rounded Survivor players in history, right? I can't think of that many people who have such a good combination of like strong social skills, very, very smart, and like physically amazing at these challenges. My one criticism of her game when I played with her is that she kind of had like strategic restless leg syndrome of like, okay, let's do something. Come on, it would be fun if we did something kind of crazy right now. And she seems to be tampering that down this season. I mean, going against Zeke was maybe reminiscent of that, but I think the fact that she's been kind of a lower key player is a testament to her growth as a player. Not itching to do something crazy. The one thing that alarms me about her gameplay is that I feel like in scenes, maybe this is me just being a reading into everything like a nut, but I feel like we frequently see her. She's never the one listening in conversations that we see. She's always the one saying, all right, this is what we're going to do next, Suri. This is what we're going to do next, Sarah. I feel like there's a lot of power in being the person that's being told that stuff. Because like, if you're just giving away all the information, I don't know. That's one thing that worries me about her game, that she is kind of being this aggressive person that's putting her out front in a way where, I don't know, she's cemented herself as maybe the biggest threat in the game right now, right? I mean, like, who's a bigger threat than
Ceree,
but apparently not. Nobody
but
seems
Andrea's winning challenges.
Yeah, Andrea's winning challenges, and she's very closely tied to Ceree, so taking out Andrea would neuter Ceree. You know, I think that I'm worried about Andrea. I think it's the fact that she's such a huge threat, again, is proof of her growth. I think we've seen tremendous growth, and each time – I'm saying tremendous. I'm saying like Trump. I don't know. Sorry, I don't mean that.
You didn't say she's huge, bro.
Yeah, tremendous is another one, though. I think she's been doing – I don't know why I'm rambling now. She's been doing a fantastic job. I forgot what the question was. I think I just went on a diversion for no reason.
No, Andrea, you talked about her being a really well-rounded player. One of the things that looking back at her first two games coming into this season, we sort of identified was that she never has a number one ally. Like there's not like one person who sort of has her back. And, you know, you had that with Dawn where it was almost like that you could trust them almost no matter what. And I think that a lot of the, you know, most effective players end up getting that. We haven't seen her with that. It seems like it's starting to develop with Ceree.
Yeah.
Do you, could you see them? And could you have two players that are both such, you know, aggressive, strategic players being sort of like that 1-2 punch?
I mean, that's a dream alliance. Like, I think that most viewers would feel that way, that that is what, I mean, I know selfishly that I would like to see them dominate things and really take over this game. What's the question? Whether they will be able to do it?
Do you think that that could emerge as the person? Like, Andrea really has never had that wing person.
It's not clear to me whether she has that with Ceree. I think that, because I don't know, there was that one scene a couple weeks ago. I forget what the context was, but there was something where, like, maybe Sarah was talking to Ceree and was like, do you think we could get Andrea back in the loop? And Ceree was like, yeah, I think so. I don't know.
It seems like Ceree has that with a couple people. She has it with Michaela. She seems to have, like,
right,
these.
Yeah, I think Ceree has plenty of connections, whereas Andrea seems like she has very few. And I think part of the reason that she's struggled in the past is because of that strategic restless leg syndrome. Being around that energy is kind of like, oh, yeah, yeah, you would want to do all this stuff. And then when that person goes and talks to somebody from another alliance, like she would do with Reynold and Eddie and Malcolm and stuff, what's racing in our minds is like, what? She's probably saying the same stuff to them, that she wants to do something crazy or she's plotting something, even when it was the most innocent thing. I think it just inspired feelings of lack of trust, even though it was completely undeserved. She should be trusted. She's like a very a shockingly trustworthy player and very straightforward in terms of how she deals with people. But there is some element that she's so overtly strategic sometimes. I think that's it. It's like when she's talking about strategy, it's like, oh, they're having a strategy conversation. Okay, let's talk strategy. And it's hard to have that be your person. Like with Dawn, we just had kind of this shared vocabulary. It was very easy and effortless. Like, okay, let's do that. Okay, that sounds good. With Andrew, it was always a little bit more clinical, like, okay, yeah, no, we can do that. Let's count the numbers on our fingers and let's draw some stuff in the sand. But I think she's doing an amazing job. Sorry, now I'm just being so negative.
No,
is this horrible?
This is great insight. And
no, she's amazing. I love
her. And let me also go back to what we were talking about earlier, where I said to Andrea before the season started or before she went out there, it's like, this is a terrible idea.
Yeah.
If I didn't express that enough, you know, again, just another illustration of I'm stupid. I'm dumb. I don't know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
None of my predictions are ever right.
Right.
And people know a lot better than me.
Yeah, and you're talking to the guy that said Wu was going to win. So we're both idiots.
Right.
And so nobody should be listening to us right now.
Nobody should be listening to us unless it's just for, like, you know, historicals or like to go back and laugh when what we say is wrong.
Yeah.
But yeah, I really do feel stupid. And that's why I almost never want to give I complain like, oh, nobody asked me for advice. But my advice is terrible also.
That's not true. What sort of advice would you give somebody? Generally speaking, if a survivor called you up, I guess it depends on the person, but let's say somebody called you up and said, like, all right, I think I'm on a returning player season. I think it's going to be all returning players. What sort of advice do you have for me?
You know what? Nobody really has ever done that before. The closest is like when Steven was going to go back. And I suspect he probably really picked your brain. I think he wasn't super interested in what I had to say, but I just said, like, hey, they're going to vote you out anyway. Just have fun. Just have fun. Whatever. Because again, I feel like a lot of pressure. Then if somebody does ask for my advice, then I don't want them to come home when they lose and say, I did everything you said. This is on you.
Yeah. No, more likely than not, they're not going to win and they will blame you for stuff. Yeah. So I think that's the smartest approach. Steven actually didn't really pick my brain that much. We talked a little bit about some tiny little tips and stuff, but generally I think that was him and I think he did a good job.
Yeah. So I think he actually, JT picked his brain for this season.
Oh,
and all the stuff that JT did bad, I think that was all advice from Steven.
Do you think Steven is taking pleasure in JT's self-destruction.
No.
I know Steven's like defending him at every turn and being the sweetest guy in the world about it, but there has to be a substantial part of him that's like, yeah, no, this is proof that I was a brainiac in Token Genes. And like this guy that at every turn seems to blow up his game can't function without me.
It's hard to read. Hard to read.
And he's not said this to me. So like he's actually been, he's constantly praised JT to me too. And I'm like, be real with me, Steven.
Yes.
Nobody's that happy for somebody else, especially somebody else that beat them in the past.
Yeah.
I don't know.
It's a good question.
I'm interested in that sort of stuff.
All right. I'm sure everybody wants to know about your experience with Debbie going back. And then really, you know, we saw a different side of Debbie from like at the point that you went into the game to go see Debbie. Yeah. It was the like absolute nadir of the story of Debbie, right? It was almost like Debbie was completely like a lunatic. She's off the rails. She's crazy. She's a nut. Then you went out there. And then we really saw a different side of her after she went back into the game.
Yeah.
Now, was that your experience with Debbie? And again, in my exit interviews with her, you know, she talked about how like, well, I was chewing the shrubbery up on certain things and I really was playing it up. I wasn't right. that mad. Brad and I were working together the whole time. So what was your experience with her?
So I had a very pleasant experience with her. I will say that like I did not know that was the low point of her game. When I got there, I was not told like just so you know she had this big blow up and she's a nut and
even know who was gonna be there? Or did they tell you like
so what happened? So I get there. So yeah, to give the logistics, I arrive in I take a helicopter to get to the beach where and like Jeff's on the landing strip waving his arms to say hello and he's filming me on his iPhone. He takes me to this little bungalow, he shows me a picture of the cast. And there's like X's over the faces of the people that were kicked off. And he says, these are where the tribes are right now. He didn't say like, this is what happened leading up to that. I don't think he wanted me to waste time with Debbie saying like, wait, so who's playing? Oh, wait, okay. And that's who's on your tribe. So just to show me just the cast. And I remember just when he was saying like, yeah, so first it was Bob, but then it was Bob. It was just like, oh, the alpha guy's gone. I remember being, oh, this is crazy. Like it was all
right.
Malcolm and Tony and all these big people. But sorry. So yeah, then he left to go to, am I going into too much detail?
I don't think so.
Okay. So then he left to go to like the challenge location or the location of where the tribe swap would be. I got to hang out at tribal council. They kind of treated me like I was a kid on a field trip. Like, hey, you want to go to tribal council and take photos? I got to hang out, sit on the little thing where Jeff interrogates people and took a vote or took a little picture in the voting booth.
And what were you doing at tribal council by yourself? Were you having like a fake tribal council?
I was just admiring the handiwork because like you don't see the extent of all the I posted a picture of it on Instagram. Like you don't see the level of detail that goes into all the craftsmanship and stuff there because it's dark when you're usually watching it. So I was just kind of in awe of like this giant lighthouse where you vote, and I was just blown away by the crazy thing is that actually like it was all on the same island. It was just like a golf cart ride away from the resort where everyone was staying.
Yeah,
because when you're playing Survivor, you envision tribal council being in this super isolated like purgatory land, but it was like literally like 100 feet away from like a place where like Jeff Probst is eating hot dogs and stuff. I don't know if he eats hot dogs. So while I was there,
bacon,
right? Yeah. Oh yeah, oh man. I forgot the reference. But then like while I was at tribal council, I was with like a handler who had a walkie-talkie.
Yeah.
And then over the walkie-talkie, it said like, and the person going to tribal or to Exile Island is Debbie. I don't know if it was that voice. But I remember kind of being like, oh no. I was like a little freaked out. I wasn't sure who I wanted it to be, but I wasn't sure whether I wanted it to be her. I was hoping it would be like Aubrey, I think. I was worried about it being Sandra or Ceri or Tony. I mean, Tony obviously wasn't there, but I was like, what am I going to say to them? Like, this is going to be ridiculous.
Yeah. Listen, Cochran, I got this.
Yeah. I thought Ozzy would have been funny, but it was Debbie. I was like, okay. And I'm having to, I didn't have like talking points coming into this. The whole thing was like very nerve wracking for me. I was mainly scared from the perspective though, less of what I was going to say to Debbie and more like the logistics of like, when am I going to take this box out of the bag? Like nobody told me like there wasn't anything like, there wasn't a producer saying now's the time to talk about the twist options. And this is a very meandering response to your question, which was how was Debbie when I saw her? But I'm just contextualizing everything.
Keep going. I'll stop you.
Will you do that? Yes. You are complicit in my rambling by not interrupting.
Blame me.
Okay,
blame me.
Okay, good. So like I was just worried, like, when am I going to take this box out? So I asked Probst, I'm like, when do I take the twist options out? And he said, oh, yeah, whenever it feels natural.
I'm like, there's no part of this that feels natural. This is like the most unnatural experience of my life and probably the most unnatural thing that's ever happened on Survivor. So if that's your basis for when I'm taking out the box, like the box is not going to come out. I forget what actually triggered it coming out. I think there was just kind of like a natural stopping point at a certain point. The funny thing is, like, when he first pitched the twist to me, I know I'm rambling again. He had said, like, oh, we're going to have a twist menu, and we want you to present the twist menu. And when he
twist
said,
menu?
Yeah, when he said menu, I was thinking I was going to be dressed like a butler or something and have like a little silver tray and be like, yeah, like, the specials this evening, madame, are extra votes is a fine choice, you know? And the thing is, on the little scrolls, there were like little warnings, like for the extra vote, it said like, just so you know, no one's ever used this properly, kind of as like a deterrent to try to, I think the coolest thing would have been the fake idol kit. That's kind of what I was pushing for.
Yeah.
Because, and I think we talked about this on the Facebook thing, but like there was actually enough materials to make a bunch of fake idols, which I thought was cool from the perspective of like you could make a minefield of like fake idols and you don't know, you know, people are finding them and not sure whether they're real or not and just screwing people over. Debbie was not super interested in that. But sorry, to go back to Debbie, I met her and I will say the beginning of our conversation was kind of the like, everything's great. I'm going to win this game. Everyone loves me. I love everyone. I'm in the perfect position and nothing can stop me. But then the more we talked, we were talking for like an hour and a half. So there was like, they showed maybe 20 seconds of it. Mm-hmm. But we're just kind of going person by person what their feelings were. And with Brad, I think I sensed some slight like, oh, okay, something's going on with Brad. They make it seem like she immediately offered the fact that Brad was at odds with her. It took a while for her to mention that. And then I kind of latched onto that and turned into this bigger discussion about like ego, which is a big, if we can save it for another time, I don't know, or I can talk about it. I have a whole like overarching theory of ego in Survivor and returning player seasons that I kind of imparted to her. But I think like, and then she got
Can you give it to us quickly?
Sure. What's your definition of quickly? I could do it in 2.5 minutes.
That's great.
Okay. All right. So, and this might make me sound super obvious and it's going to sound like I'm just saying kiss up to people and be, and say what they want to hear, but it's a little bit more in depth than that.
But so, again, that you are somebody that you have come through that in your first season, you played with Coach, you played with Philip, here you are with Debbie. So you have sort of had access to these people that have something in common where they're these larger than life characters that put on a persona that that they may believe, like in their mind, they're putting on a persona.
Yeah.
But, you know, what is real?
Well, it's especially pronounced with people like that, but this idea of mine applies to everybody. And it goes into the jury and how I handle the jury and everything. So the idea is, if you apply for Survivor, you are applying for Survivor because you have a very strong, fixed sense of self and a strong self-identity. There may be some people that apply because they're like, oh, I want to discover myself and I don't know who I am. But for most people, it's like, no, I am X, Y, and Z sort of person. I'm going to apply because that's how I will win, because I'm this sort of person. So you already have a very strong idea of yourself. Then you go through this casting process where you're doing interviews and meeting with producers, and they're kind of cultivating and encouraging this version of yourself and saying, yes, you are this smart, exciting, entertaining, powerful person. And then you get a network saying, we want to put you in front of millions of people because we agree with you that you are this person. So you go through this whole process where if you already entered the process a little bit egotistical or having a very strong idea of yourself, it is now at an all-time high by the time you reach the beach. And it's doubly so for a returning player season because you've gone through all that and now you've been told, and we want you back again. So you get to the island, you don't want that very strong cemented self-identity challenged by anybody. So my philosophy is don't challenge people's identities and in fact do everything you can to reinforce it and make them feel that version of themselves is true because it makes them feel good. And I feel that when you make people feel good, you can control them. It's kind of the opposite of the Russell thing, which is like make people feel miserable and you control their feelings. I think he's half right. I think make people feel good. Nobody will get rid of you if you are a consistent source of making people feel good. How often do you see somebody casting a vote at tribal council and they're like, this, maybe with Michaela crying last night, but it's pretty rare for people to be like, this is devastating for me. So sorry.
Especially before the merge.
Especially for, exactly. So with the ego thing, the idea is you figure out what a person believes about themselves and behave in a way around them that reinforces it. So with a Philip is an exaggerated example of it, where he likes this spy stuff. He likes to be taken seriously. He likes to be a storyteller and he likes people to live in his story land with him. A lot of the other players would kind of roll their eyes and be a funny thing. Okay, here's Philip doing his thing. I completely bought into it and played along. And yeah, let's do the stealth RL stuff. This is great. With Coach, I would do Coachy. With those are extreme examples. With somebody like Sherry, I think she, her sense of self was somebody that's very in the know and in control of things. So she like kind of gossiping, and we'd have a playful, gossipy interaction with each other. So you're being to each person what they want you to be. Mm-hmm. And that extends into the jury. If you can, again, you can cut me off if this going too long. But in the jury, I think that when you're pitching your case to the jury, you want to present yourself in a way that, again, does not threaten their self-identity. So I think you should choose a quality in your game that does not rub up against other people. So I don't think when you're at tribal council, at final tribal council, that you should say, I was the strongest player for this reason. I was the smartest player for this reason. I was the most strategic for this reason. Because there, the chances are there's at least one person, probably several people on the jury that feel, no, I'm the strongest person. No, I'm the smartest person. No, I'm the most strategic person. So I went with, it was a very deliberate thing. I went with timing. I kept talking about timing when I was out there because nobody goes into Survivor being like, man, you know what I am? I'm the king of timing. And I'm very possessive about that. Nobody's going to challenge right. the fact that I'm the timing king. It's very neutral. It's a very truly important thing, but it's not anything that anybody cares about. And it kind of consoles the jury because they're like, oh yeah, he beat me just because of timing. I am still the smartest, most strong, strategic person. But, you know, it's the clock. The clock ran out and I had to go.
Right.
So it's about just being aware of what identities people have and catering to them. I also think that kicking people off on the jury in the order that satisfies the most recent juror plays into that. So if you kick somebody off, mm-hmm. you want the person after that to satisfy the person that was just kicked off so that they're not given time at Ponderosa to just kind of brood and be like, oh, I can't believe this happened to me. So it's like an example that would be kicking Brenda off after Andrea because Brenda wanted Andrea off. It's a consolation prize. Like, okay, I may be out, but now at least Brenda's out too. And
I get that. I get that. When in Survivor of the Amazon, when if people can remember what I'm talking about, but Dina was like going, you know, head to head with Alex. And then after Dina got voted out, I was like, oh, Dina will be mad that she got voted out. But, you know, Alex is getting voted out. She'll like,
and I think that goes a long way.
Right.
And it doesn't threaten their ego stays intact because they're not like, oh, that person's still beating me. It's kind of like, okay, that person, they had an expiration date too. I feel a little bit better. Mm-hmm. So that's, I didn't impart it in those words to Debbie. I mean, there's probably more depth I can go into it about it, but I want to cut myself off. But like with Debbie, it was just saying, like with Brad, I actually probably had the wrong read on Brad in retrospect because I watched in the first season and my memory of him, not that it was super strong, my memory was like, oh, he's kind of like a loudmouth jerk, brutish guy that isn't good at math and people don't like him. So my advice to her was like, play into, if he's the big macho man, he does not want an equally macho woman challenging him. So just apologize. And then the advice that I gave that, and this is all like self-congratulatory. Am I sounding like I'm patting myself on the, this is just me telling what I said to Debbie. I'm not meaning to be like saying I'm the greatest thing in the world. I don't
keep
think I'm
going.
Okay, sorry.
I'll stop you.
Okay. I know. Well, I don't know if you're just silenced by the ridiculousness of what I'm saying or whether it's because it's captivating. Okay. Like a thing that they didn't show for good reason, because it was kind of a fourth ball breaking advice I gave her, was like, I told her to apologize to Brad. I think that rubbed up against her. She's like, I don't apologize. That's kind of a surrender. I didn't do anything wrong. He challenged my ballet expertise, and it's only fair that I be angry at him. And by the way, I don't think she cares about her ballet expertise being questioned. I think that's emblematic of her not feeling listened to in her alliance or not having her opinion valued. Mm. Nobody cares about the ballet stuff. But so I said, apologize. And then you can use your, I said, that's what the interviews are for. The interviews are for you to, it's the dramatic irony of you're apologizing to Brad. Then you do an interview and say, screw Brad. He's a jerk. I'm only apologizing because I want to satisfy this jerk idiot. Mm-hmm. And then you can have the best of both worlds. You're satisfying people in person and then getting to clarify. So it's not this kind of surrender. You can empower it. I actually think it's a very powerful thing to placate people because their feelings are still under your control, even though they feel like they are controlling you.
Yeah. I totally get that.
Does that make any sense? But that just stating the obvious? I don't know.
No. I mean, everything you're saying with down to the confessionals, I mean, one of the things, like, you know, I get into these fights with my wife, and then I can apologize to her, but then I can say on the podcast, like, you know, I said I was sorry, but I really didn't mean it.
Does she listen to the podcast?
No, okay. That's the best part of it. So it's like almost like, you know, you have these, you know, it's better. It's like, you know, it would be like if Debbie did those things and then Brad doesn't watch the show.
Right, yeah.
You know,
exactly,
he only got the apology. And then in terms of the ego stuff, you make a lot of really good points. And I think that that is a trait, what you're talking about, of being a different person to each of the other players. I think that's a trait that a lot of the best players in the game tend to share. I think that that's something that Kim does exceptionally
well. Yeah, Kim's great at it.
I think even, and Boston Rob, I think also does that very well, where, you know, to some people, he's, you know, sort of like the older brother. Yeah. To other people, you know, he's like another, he's one of the guys, you know, he'll do that to some degree.
He's by a fatherly figure to certain people. Yeah, he's
right,
like,
be the person that they want yeah. you to be. I do think that that's something.
And they will not vote you off. Like, that's like, you will not vote off somebody that makes you feel good. I think that's pretty true.
Yeah.
If you foster that in somebody, that they will not screw you over.
So going back to Debbie, you identified in her that her Achilles heel was her overconfidence. And you talked to her about that. Now she goes back into the game, and it did seem as though by the time she goes out of the game, she's very overconfident again.
Yeah.
Like, maybe you imparted that on her for a little bit, but it seemed like it was somewhat in one ear, out the other.
Yeah, I mean, again, well, there was a brief period where I did feel like she was correcting her course a little bit. Look, I don't know. I mean, I think the way it ended, I actually feel slightly responsible. I think I strongly encouraged her to mend fences. Is that the expression? Mend fences with Aubrey. And like, and she was very resistant to that when I was talking to her about it. And I was like, why not? Like, I was like, you played together. That right. alone should be.
But then she was like selling her a lie also.
Yeah, but I just feel bad. I'm wondering whether like there wouldn't have been any interaction had it not been for me. Maybe not. Maybe I didn't screw her over. Yeah, I guess she got overconfident. Part of me does wonder whether some of that is theatrical. Like that she knows, like when she's saying that she was the Air Force thing again, when she was talking about, oh, no, there's a lot of people who haven't been in a plane before and I have. I think she's doing it slightly tongue in cheek. She's very self-aware. She's hyper smart, very personable. We got along great. Like, I'm not just saying that because I want to be nice. Like, we got along great. She's very funny and smart. I think that some of that confidence and bluster was just that, just kind of like, I'm in charge of things. It's kind of, it's fun to role play that sort of egomania. I did it occasionally because it's kind of a fun thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
I think she probably did get overconfident. I think she was a little bit too confident in her relationship with Brad and those people. Because she was adamant that she was positive it was a march to the final six or whatever it was with that group.
Right.
And I was unable to dissuade her from that opinion. But the thing is, like, I had very little information. So what was I even supposed to say? Like, it was like hard to, when you're talking to somebody that's so confident about their position, there's very little information you can offer them. So I was just kind of speaking in generalities about like ego and confidence and apologizing.
And so she ultimately does go back, and then she brings back that extra vote, and she uses it at that tribal council.
And I thought that was a smart use
to target Ozzy.
Yeah, I mean, it was in retrospect an unnecessary use of the vote, but I think that was a good use of the vote.
Mm-hmm.
And people, I feel like I got some tweets saying like, "Oh, I'm responsible for getting Ozzy voted out again."
Again, right?
She was telling me the boot order, she was relishing the fact that it was this alpha slaughter. So I think that was just par for the course for her, that she liked that it was this continuing the chain of Malcolm and Tony and Caleb and all those guys. So I think I did not tell her to vote off Ozzy. I didn't care about any of that.
Yeah.
Actually, it would have been fun to meet Ozzy. So sorry, you didn't. Did I interrupt you? You're saying that she played the vote.
No, I just wanted to get your take on how she played the vote.
No, I mean, I think, like, again, obviously it did not need to be played, but given it was a very, as I recall, like a very narrow margin, the votes could have gone either way if somebody hadn't flipped or had flipped. So it wasn't like a complete misuse like maybe we've seen in the past. This was, I think, a logical use of the extra vote.
Did you think that she was the right target for that group of six last week to be the person to go out from that side? Because I've said that I feel like that was a weird person to go after from that side.
Oh, yeah, you shouldn't have gotten rid of Debbie. What was the reason? I don't even remember. Why did they get rid of her?
Well, I think that's what Aubrey was selling after they had this thing where they were going to sell to Sarah that she was...
Oh, right. Yeah, it was the duplicity. Yeah.
She was a liar. But I just felt like that was not somebody who was in control on that side. Now, maybe they did think, and I wish I would have asked Zeke in the exit interview, because he said on the episode last night, like, they were like, why Debbie? And he said, oh, we thought she was in charge.
That was a joke, though, right?
I don't know.
Because I took it as... I thought that was like a very kind of cool insult to the people remaining, like, oh my god, we come across that bad that they, not that the Debbie's that bad, but I'm saying, like,
right,
that you really thought Debbie wasn't, oh my god,
yeah,
what do you think about us? So I don't know, I feel like, why wouldn't you go against Brad or Sierra or like, and because Sierra's consistently been mentioned as a huge threat, and I feel like it was a wasted opportunity on that. I don't know. I feel like there's been a few wasted opportunities in terms of votes this season, and that was one of them. I would have liked. I think Debbie should have gotten far further.
Did you like that Sarah ended up switching from the one side to the other? As somebody who once upon a time switched sides. Yeah. And again, nobody's seen that upset with Sarah Cena. Nobody's
yeah, how does she avoid that? Me. How does that happen?
Right. I don't know. She must have managed it better. But did you like that she flipped sides?
I like it from the perspective of a viewer. Like, because from flipping to now to being with like Andrea and Sari and stuff,
mm-hmm.
that's the side. I mean, as a viewer, I want them to do well. So I'm kind of delighted anything that benefits that group. I think there's a lot. I think that's also like factors into a lot of people's analyses of the game. It's like whether it benefited the people that they enjoy watching. Sure. And they mask that saying it was a bad strategic choice for this reason. No, it's because you wanted to see Sari do well, as everyone does, myself included. She's my favorite player of all time. But just because a move doesn't benefit her doesn't mean it's a horrible move.
Mm-hmm.
Like I think Zeke got a lot of flack, for instance. And Zeke, I don't know, like I don't know what you talked to him about. I haven't seen any of his X interviews. Like, I will say, I've seen a lot of backlash against him in the last few weeks, and it's been frustrating to me because, not to bring up the Varner stuff again, but for us, that whole tribal council was a 10-minute thing. We watched it. We maybe talked about it for a few days after that. Then it left our consciousness, and we were back to the game. For Zeke, he just had a life-changing moment,
mm-hmm.
and he has to play the rest of the game knowing that his life has been inexorably changed, and you expect him to seamlessly transition right back into, like, a super level-headed game. I think that some of the crazy moves we saw him too in the aftermath of that was maybe reckless maneuvering to kind of just reorient himself back in the game and shift the attention away from that, just because that had to be, having that looming over you has to be a huge distraction and not conducive to anybody's
right.
game.
But I think that in terms of the game, I think that one of the things, and I touched on this in my exit interview with him, was that, and I think he believes, and probably correctly, that in addition to whatever part of his privacy that was invaded by what Jeff did in that moment, also, I think he feels like his game was blown up in that spot, where then at that point, he went from Zeke, the survivor player, to Zeke, the story. And right. if he gets to the end, he'll win against anybody. So now nobody will sit at the end of the game with him, where people weren't thinking that about him.
Debbie even said that, right? Didn't Debbie say, like, he has
right.
the best
story?
Right,
he has the best story. He has the best story. And he says that that really did change his relationship with, and he wasn't that close with Andrea after that. Everybody looked at him, instead of being just a regular member of the tribe, he became a threat. It was almost like, you know, what Jeff did didn't have the effect that Jeff intended, where people would say, let's get rid of him because we can't trust him. It ended up being like, oh, this is the best story. He'll win automatically. Right, we have to get rid of him.
Do you think those conversations were had? Do you think that, like, prior to the Zeke vote, that there was, like, in addition to the fact that we don't trust him, he's going to turn against us, that we also don't want to go against him in the end? Was that like...
Oh, by the merge, I think that those things were happening. People said in the episodes, he has the best story. So I really do feel badly for Zeke, you know, that, you know, he had, you know, his privacy really interfered with. But then also that, you know, it's his dream to win the game. Right. And then that also ended up getting affected by this.
Yeah, I feel like we haven't seen what he's capable of as a player yet. I mean, in the first season, whatever, I'm saying as a returning player, we've not seen what he's capable of, because this is so many asterisks in terms of, like, things that have happened to him and stuff. So
also, I didn't know this. He only had 2 weeks in between the two seasons, him and Michaela.
Yeah,
I thought that, in my mind, I thought they had like 4 months. I thought
really?
I thought it was a really big layoff in between those two seasons.
Yeah. Keeping that in mind, especially with Michaela too, like, it's an unbelievably horrific experience to play a survivor, and then to, after 2 weeks, start over again is insane. Like, I haven't done it. Like, I can't even articulate or imagine how difficult that must be. Mm-hmm. And for somebody like Michaela, who it's hard to argue is playing a fantastic game, like, you also have to keep in mind, not only does she have this super short turnover between the two seasons, she didn't get to watch her season, and she didn't even get to play that much. So it's like, not only she didn't have the benefit of, like, even really getting to experience the game that much, she's playing immediately after not getting any chance to kind of process what she did wrong, because she didn't have a chance to do that much wrong the first time. So again,
just from the physical standpoint, I don't know what day Zeke got voted out in the first. I'd imagine it's like around day 30
or so. Mid-merge,
in, you know, 28, something like that, in Millennials versus Gen X. But then to come back, I mean, when did you get right after playing, if ever?
Never. Clearly never.
In Colorado. Because after I came home from the Amazon, like, I wasn't right after 2 weeks. Like, yeah. I remember I came home in, like, you know, early. I think that the final travel council was, like, the 12th or 13th of December. And I came home, and I couldn't stay up past, like, you know, 7 o'clock, 8 o'clock at night. I would just, like, whatever I was doing, yeah, I'd be like falling asleep.
Oh, so that's how your not rightness manifests itself, like narcolepsy?
No, I just, you know, you go to bed on Survivor. It's like, okay. It's like 7 o'clock at night. You know, it's, yeah, you know, the sun goes down and, you know, you go to sleep because there's nothing else to do. Yeah. You don't, nobody's,
so you didn't have psychological, because I was like a basket case when I came back.
I don't think I really had, caused more psychological issues, but yeah. I don't think I had a ton of, yeah, psychological trauma coming, yeah, out of it. But
I don't want to say, I don't want to sound too severe. Trauma is maybe a strong word, but I was definitely like, because I took a semester off law school when I got, mm-hmm, back for that reason, because it's like, it's very hard to ease back into everyday life after this very disruptive experience, and especially with the kind of dreading it airing is a big, that's the hardest thing for me.
I remember when we went to the viewing party where it was like Penner and Lisa Wetchel and Dawn Meehan.
Was Edna there too?
Edna, I think, was there, right? And they were like,
and Malcolm, I think.
Yeah, and like Penner was like pausing the show and like asking like interview. All right, so tell me what was happening then?
Yeah,
tell us about that. So it was very fun. But anyway, I feel like you were depressed then.
You thought I seemed depressed?
Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting. I'm always depressed. I'm on antidepressants. I'm like a depressed, yes, person.
Yes.
But I was probably especially depressed then. That was a low point for me, absolutely, psychologically. And it's weird because it was with the knowledge that, oh, I was probably about to win in a few weeks or whatever. That was the second season, right?
Yeah. Well, you were really, and you were very conscious of at that point in time that you said, hey, the show is on right now, but it's going to be over in 6 weeks. Yeah. And then what? Then what am I going to do? It's almost over.
Yeah.
And I didn't know that you had won at that point.
Yeah.
But you were just like, yeah, this is it. This is as good as it gets. Well, did you know that, you know, the beginning of your career was really, yeah, right around the corner?
Well, I think that, well, a big thing, and I was talking to somebody else about this recently, like, I've always been very goal-oriented in life, and like, I want to get into a good school, and I want to get good grades, and I want to be on Survivor, and I want to win Survivor. And I always imagined that achieving those things would bring me happiness,
right,
but it never does. Like, or for me at least, like, there's a fleeting moment of like, yeah, it was fun to win, but then I don't. Then I'm back to eating Kit Kat, right, bars alone.
Happiness
in my apartment.
Is chasing the goal, not,
yeah,
having,
well, that's
it.
The writing thing has been the great thing because it's the ongoing process of enjoying it. But yeah, no, watch. And I've talked to sometimes, like, I feel like I'm frequently, people that are having a difficult time with a Survivor experience will reach out to me and I'll talk to them about it, because it is like, I mean, my advice to them is always like, it will be over soon. Like, yeah, it's because, like, enjoy it while it lasts, but know that it's this great cathartic release once it's over. Because I don't think people, it's hard to understand as a viewer that it is this all-consuming experience when you're on it, especially if you're prone to being an obsessive person like I am. You'll pour over every tweet you get, every message board comment, every comment section comment. You'll dread, oh God, are they going to show this thing I said about X person tomorrow night is so-and-so? Are the people in New York going to hate me for, you know, there's so many different little factions you have to worry about. And it just is a huge distraction. Like, I was fortunate enough that I was doing it over summer vacation, was a student and had no real life obligations, but I can't imagine how difficult it is for somebody that has a family or, you know, a job or whatever. That's, I don't know whether that answered the question you asked about. The answer is yes. I was very depressed when he saw me.
Yeah. This is interesting.
But that's
point.
Like 9 times out of 10 when you meet me, that would be the case.
Yeah. Does that happen a lot? Did people say that I met you and you seemed really depressed?
I can put on that. I'm saying I usually am very depressed. I'm not depressed. Although, I don't know. Is this the most depressing negative interview ever conducted?
No, it's fascinating.
No, I feel like this is Spencer's podcast now. What's it called? What's it called? I can't remember.
we'll Google it.
Okay. Yeah. Let's just say that if you're, I don't know. I have no thesis to this except to say like, it's a very difficult experience, but when you have the proper perspective after it's over, it's the greatest thing I've ever done. My memories are only...
What is Survivor?
Survivor.
Yeah.
And like doing this Debbie thing, I know people made fun of it and everyone complained about it and stuff, but like it was the most fun day of my life. The most fun I've ever had.
Yeah.
It was amazing. And I saw people say like, why did they waste 20 minutes on this? It was 4.5 minutes. Get over it. If 4.5 minutes of seeing me on a boat ruined your enjoyment of a show you've been following for 17 years, like apparently I wield more influence than I thought, because like it was a dopey fun little thing. I thought it was a sweet thing. I'm sorry I ruined the season.
Would you be excited to do it again?
Should that be a regular thing? I would like to do it again, but I don't foresee that happen. I mean, I don't know. I also don't. It's the same thing with like going to the finales.
Right.
I always feel very goofy because I remember being a kid and watching, and I feel like I would always see Rupert in the audience and be wearing his tie-dye shirt and be like, that's kind of pathetic. I'm like, why did he go in there again? And now like I am that pathetic dork in the audience. Right. I mean, Jeff invites me. It's a fun, for me, it's like going to the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
It's like you get to watch somebody's life change, and it's, I don't know, it's fun watching.
See, I feel like that you... I get that you like being there, but I almost feel like that you don't like it when they cut to you.
Yeah, no, that's true. I love being there. You think I get pleasure out of like being shown sheepishly grinning in a sitting down? Like that's what like the basis of my self-esteem is? No, I hate that. That's like a con. The pro is like it's fun watching in this auditorium full of people that are
right.
They cheer when something good happens, they boo when they don't like what happens. It's kind of an electric atmosphere.
It's really fun. I think that the most fun one that I had gone to was the one for the Second Chances when they had the tribal council with the 0-0. That was really
exciting. I want to talk, or do you have a subject you want to change? Because I want to talk about that in general.
Talk about it.
Like, so what sticks with you after watching a season? Because for me, I realized, I think for the longest time, it would be things like the zero vote tribal council or the double idol play for poverty and stuff. But now, like, all I remember and all I care about are like stories and character moments. Like for Game Changers, for instance, I could not really tell you the logistics behind that zero vote scenario. I remember it involved Kimmy and Keith and stuff, but like, I feel like those moments are short-term thrills. It's exciting the moment you watch it, but then then it's done. What resonates with me, I will never forget Teeth riding the tuk-tuk. Mm-hmm. That for me is like what sticks with me. So when you reflect on a season, what stands out to you or what makes a good season for you?
I think it's the big moments. I do.
The gameplay moments?
I mean, it could be gameplay. It could be something emotional, but I think that those are sort of like the, just like going back to something that happened last season with the Millennials versus Gen X. I feel like that you had that moment where Michaela got voted out of the game and it was, such a blindside, but the reactions were so memorable. And that sort of sticks with me. And then also when we had like the rock draw was another time where
Rock draw did nothing for like, the human reactions stick with me. That I agree with. But the rock, I don't know.
But just seeing the reaction of that, Jessica, and then having like that happen to her. I mean,
that was a drag. I want Jessica to come back.
Yeah, that was something that stuck with me. So I think it's both of those things. I do think that there are character moments that pop. I wouldn't necessarily say like, oh, okay, when Lucy got idled out of the game, I would, that's not necessarily, something that I say is, one of Survivor's greatest moments. So it doesn't have to be necessarily the votes.
What are your thoughts on idols in general?
I mean, I feel like for the most part, I don't think that they ruin any. I know people complain about that there's a lot of them, but just like in talking it through with Josh Wiggler recently, I was like, I can't think of a time that it was a bad moment. Like, I know people complain that they're there, but when they're used, like going back to when they got used, like two at the same tribal council, like, I don't think that there's ever been a point where I'm like watching like, oh, really?
Yeah.
So two idols played at this one tribal council.
Yeah.
So it's more annoying. I think people like roll their eyes when they're found, but I feel like that people rarely roll their eyes when they get played.
Yeah. No, I have the same feeling about it. Well, and I love the finding I don't care for at all. Like I don't, seeing somebody stick their hand into a hole in a tree and pick out like a crumpled piece of parchment and a necklace is like, I've seen it 200 times now. I will say that the finding idols at challenges consistently gets me excited. There's something so exciting about
that. It
was
so weird that they just did the one with Troyzan this season and that was it. It was like a tease.
I feel there's been a lot of like one, I mean, the exile thing was like a one and done thing. I had to clarify that to Debbie too. I had to be like, I'm not going to come back. I'm not going to spill your secrets because I thought there might be some chance of like trepidation on her end.
Mm-hmm.
I agree that like the effect it has in the game outweighs any potential negatives. Sorry, I don't know why I asked that. I was just curious about, because I feel like with the idea of big moves too, like what are big moves? I've talked to Steven about this. As far as I can tell, there are only like four or five big moves you can make. Like you can play an idol on somebody. You can have an idol played on you. You can vote out an ally. You can get somebody else to vote out an ally. And that's it. Like what are big moves?
I think big moves are the antithesis of like
begonging.
Yeah, basically.
Okay, so anything except a begonging is a big move.
Right. Anything that is going to shake up the status quo. And even you could spin something that isn't a big move into a big move if there's enough of a threat of that there was going to be a big move and you sort of are able to sort of like dance. I think that really the worst thing that could happen on the show is a boring boot episode. So really, the more things that could be going on in terms of, you know, twists or gameplay, you know, you sort of want to keep the audience in suspense that last 10 minutes of the show and not know what's going to happen. Because I think that really the seasons that we think of as the worst seasons are, it's a predictable boot order in terms of like one side has the numbers and then it's just picking off the person week after week. And there's almost, you know, nothing that they can do from the show's perspective.
Yeah. If I can be negative again for a second, not that I've stopped at any point in this entire conversation.
Yes.
This is actually, it's actually a positive thing. I've like loved the season so far.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like I keep my finger on the pulse of what's going on online.
Yes.
And I
feel like you're tapped in.
I am. I may not talk about it, but I'm very tapped. I have like it's like the Matrix in my apartment, just tons of like, there's Reddit on one thing and Twitter on another, you know, everything's always being looked at. I felt like there was so much like preemptive complaining like online. It would be like when all those like big names were going off early, it'd be like, yeah, no, the season's great now, but just wait until like Sandra's gone. It's going to be horrible once she's gone. Like, how about you wait until they're gone before you start complaining? It's actually continued to be great. You don't know whether somebody's going to emerge as like, I've been super pleasantly surprised by Brad. He's somebody I didn't care about at all. And I think he's been like a very compelling person. And the same thing with like Kelly Wentworth. I'm saying like, just be open to the possibility they're going to enjoy it instead of this like willful, like, oh, this is going to be horrible. I don't know. That frustrates me.
Yeah, I'm with you. For me, it's been the same thing where I have had a lot of dread, you know, as the weeks have gone on where, you know, okay, we lose this big player. We lose this big player. Okay. Is the season going to get bad? Is the season going to get bad? Because it's hard on me to podcast about, you know, bad seasons and bad episodes when there's nothing going on. It makes it really hard to do.
But has there been a bad episode so far?
No, I think that they've all been, I think that probably the worst episodes, I think that the Caleb boot, that was sort of a non-event. Speaks to that, where it was either going to be Caleb or Haley. But you had a tribe swap there in that episode. Yeah. And then so you had a lot of stuff to talk through with the tribe swap. And then also the first hour after the merge, which they smartly combined into a double episode.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Those probably would have been the most, you know, straightforward things that happened in this season. But look, the finale is 2 weeks from Wednesday.
There's not much time for it to get horrible, guys. Like, it's still been, you know, it's
like this could go any number of ways.
Yeah.
So
I was so pleasantly surprised that, like, cause I thought it was going to be, after the merge, I thought it was going to be Suri goes and Andrea goes and all, you know, all that alliance. The fact that it's kind of been bouncing back and forth has been super exciting. And I love the pre-merge, even though it was super upsetting, you know, in an ideal world. Yes. I would love to have Malcolm and Sandra and Tony still running around and stuff. But there was something with that, the pre-merge, it was like watching Survivor through like a funhouse mirror. Like everyone was kind of like a weird, distorted, exaggerated version of themselves. Like the fact that, and look, there was like weird poetic parallels of like Malcolm, and I hated how he went, but like there was something weirdly appropriate about it. The guy who pioneered the live tribal council being voted out and won like of the most obscene live tribal councils. Seeing Sandra get voted off was so like unnatural. Tony's appearance was – the Tony thing breaks my heart.
Mm-hmm.
I can't – what was your reaction to the Tony situation?
I was very upset to see Tony go. I'm the biggest Tony fan out there. I really was upset to see him go. I thought, and again, Tony did not reach out to me for like, hey, what I should do. But I think I would have said like, hey, let's walk it back a little bit. Instead, he went full Tony. You know, you never go full Tony.
But it's like, and on top of going full Tony, like you get to camp. The first seconds where you arrive at camp, everyone's in their own head. You're thinking about, okay, where are going to put the shelter? Where's the bamboo? You have enough going on. The last thing you need is some guy to be like, chase me, guys. I'm going to go find an idol. You know, it's like this weird theatrical,
But I thought that it was almost like that was a joke.
No, but it was a joke, but it was a completely self-focused spectacle. Like, he was assuming other people cared about him more than they did. And yes, people all thought he was a threat, but like, that was unnecessary. The spy, whatever.
Spy bunker. That was bad.
That's like a joke, though. I mean, he knows that's a joke. Like, that's like a funny thing to do. No, right. There's no adult man who thinks it's reasonable to cover yourself in leaves and twigs and that's like a winning strategy. So I think he just was so, I think he was like, I'm going to be a huge threat, that blew up in his head so much. It was like, I'm just going to pull out the bag of tricks and go crazy and just go out in a crazy way. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe this was all very intentional and he had a game plan. I just love him so much. I hope it doesn't sound like I'm bad-mouthing, because like, I love him. I've consistently said he is. I think I did a Reddit Ask Me Anything, and I said, like,
yeah,
if his personality was split into three people, they would be three of the most entertaining survivors ever. And yet he has the most
entertaining total package of Survivor. I mean, he is the guy that is so unpredictable. And again, I've called him a unicorn in the past in terms of, like, there's no way he should have won the season that he did. And it's amazing that he did. And I love that season.
Who do you want to go? I feel bad because you have this like medieval scroll of questions and notes.
I didn't even get to these are the questions. Okay. These are just my notes.
I was going to say, like, if we went person by person, would you say who has improved in standing in your eyes and who has...
Their legacy?
Legacy.
Okay, sure. You want to go through all the 20 people? I mean,
or the remaining people? I don't know. What's the most sensible thing to do?
I think that we can just, you know, I think it's like not a lot of discussion. Like Sierra has decreased. Tony has decreased.
Yeah.
Caleb has somehow decreased.
I think Caleb's pretty much stayed the same.
Okay. Yeah. Malcolm, you know, I wanted to talk more about Malcolm because you played with him, obviously. You guys have become friends, the unlikely friendship which is formed from Survivor Karamoan, because you guys were not on the same page during that season.
Yeah, well, the funny thing with Malcolm is, like, when I first met him, first off, the fact that he was a player that we hadn't seen, I was immediately, like, jealous of him. I was like, kind of like, oh, God, he must be some real great guy if they brought him back immediately. Because at that point, the only precedent for that was Russell. Like, now it's actually happened a few times. It's less...
Amanda Kimmel and James had also done it in Micronesia.
But they had not done the two-week break, is what I'm saying. Like, this was the second time where it was people... Like, it was, like, immediate. Because Fiji and... Or China and Micronesia, there must have been a few months off, I think.
Probably.
But when I first actually got to talk to him, we sat down and we started talking about how we both like Penner, and we realized we actually have like more in common than we don't like.
He said he liked Penner?
Yeah, he loves Penner. Whoa. But just as a personality. I'm not saying as a player or whatever, but like we both like him as a narrator and stuff. And like, it's kind of how like with chimps, like 99.9% of our genes are the same. But that 0.1% difference like makes all the difference.
It's huge.
With me and Malcolm, it's like 99.99% the same, except that 0.01 like makes him attractive and charming. Mm-hmm. You know? But like lots of other stuff is actually, we're shockingly similar guys. So we get along very well. He's like an irresistibly charismatic guy. And I'm usually very resistant to that sort of thing. And he's even capable of winning me over. I remember the first few times when I moved out here, we hung out. This is all unnecessary information. You probably want to talk about game stuff, but like he introduced me to this like world of LA life, and we were like going to parties and like we're in a hot tub together at a certain point and all this stuff. And like the fact that he was capable of getting me to do that is a testament to his ability to like massage people in certain directions.
Whoa. What kind of parties were these?
What was like at some hotel, like the Hotel Roosevelt, this very like trendy thing. And everyone knows him and is coming up to him. And I'm just like standing with my hands in my pockets and then throwing up in the bathroom and stuff. I embarrassed myself at every single one of these things.
Why were you throwing up from embarrassment or from being drunk?
Probably a combination.
Yeah.
Well, because he's like, I'm a wimp. I drink like Coca-Cola and
Are you a drinker?
Socially not. Now I've become like a complete badass.
Yes.
I don't know why I said that. I meant to say bad boy, but I said badass instead.
So what do you, as a badass, what do? You get like crunked?
I'm capable of getting crunked on a pretty consistent basis. Although, no. My natural habitat actually is like I don't go outside. Mm-hmm. But I'm capable of doing it now.
Right.
There's a brief period. I don't know. Again, there's lots of like unsavory stuff I've done. Now I'm course corrected because I just turned 30 this year.
Yes.
And like I'm realizing that I think I tweeted about this like 3 years ago, but it was a joke then. And now it's true that like the things that were kind of funny, quirky little 20-something-year-old eccentricities about me now are like heartbreaking character flaws that are like just depressing. Like he used to be like, oh, John, that's funny. You can't drive. And he's like, eats pudding for every meal. It's like, now it's like, oh my God, he's like this like lonely 30-year-old that's like just eating Kit Kat bars. So, no, that's not to say I'm too much of a bad boy. I don't know why I said I was a badass. That was, like, insane of me. But the nice thing is, like, through sheer force of will or just mental illness on my end, now it's gotten to the point where when we hang out, we just, like, watch Jeopardy, play Mario Kart, and then get sushi. So it's like we've settled into something that I'm more comfortable with.
So ultimately,
I won in the end. Yeah. Although I think he likes it. I don't think he would do it if he didn't like it.
Okay. But Malcolm.
Sorry. Well, what do you want to know about Malcolm?
Well, I think that we were just you had wanted to talk through all the players to see increased or decreased.
I think it had no effect. I think that. Look, he was in a position where he couldn't do anything. And that's what's... We'll see him play again, and he'll win, probably.
That's what everybody thinks. He could be the first one out the next time he goes.
That'd be
a disturbing trend.
It depends on the people he's with. I think he's an asset strategically, even though I didn't...
I think he needs to mix it up. I don't know what he needs to do. I think he almost needs to, like, completely...
Just reinvent himself.
Throw out the Malcolm playbook and come back with something new.
Yeah, the charming strategist maybe is it's old hat
it's
now.
It's too on the nose. And everybody sees it coming.
And it's like a very threatening persona. Like the super athletic, charming, smart guy. Like nobody wants to go to the end with that.
Yeah.
So maybe bring out, because he's capable of being quite a jerk.
Right.
No, I'm kidding. Just as I am. We are both like very mean about people sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
So I think he should bring that up, because I think that was actually his intention at first. He said like his first season, he thought he was going to be...
The villain?
Yeah, the villain.
He needs to go like full Russell?
Yeah, now he's going to win the freaking bracket for the greatest survivor of all time. Can you believe that?
Oh, is that who he's going to win? That's not going
to
help.
It's down to him and Boston Rob, right?
Oh, that's the hero versus the villain?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what it was. What were you, the hero?
I was not even in the chart.
I think you were probably too hard to pin down. You're too three-dimensional.
Yeah, or I'm just pointless, yeah.
So then going back to then, what, after Malcolm was what? That was JT?
JT obviously has gone down.
Gone down.
And Steven hates that he went down. Steven can't stand the thought of his whatever. Give me a break. He loves it. He's loving this right now. He has a dart. If you go to his apartment, he has a dartboard with JT's face on it and a JT voodoo doll. He'll never talk about it. He has this whole like shrine where he's like constantly wishing ill on JT. So for him to constantly like defend him at every turn is so disingenuous because he freaking hates him. He was going to sabotage like his, when he was officiating the wedding, he was like, I'm going to actually keep my fingers crossed the whole time so they're not really married. I'm like, that's kind of mean, Steve. And he was like, no, but I hate him. And I'm like, okay, fine. Jeez.
Right.
Why are you telling me this?
I heard that he got the tooth that JT got knocked out and he uses that as part
that's
of the voodoo
in
the spell.
Yeah. He actually got the tooth implanted into his own mouth just to kind of be like, see, I'm the king. Now he has like an extra tooth. It seems like unwieldy and impractical, but he's like loves to show it off. Ask him about it.
So then Sandra that we said
Sandra, I think it went way up.
Way up. Where?
Way up. And that's amazing.
Because she silenced her critics. Her critics said like, yeah, but she's boring.
Yeah. Well, and like I usually watch the show alone, but like so-and-so watch with some other people and they're not super duper fans that they didn't necessarily remember her from her first time. And they started the season or first two times. They started the season being like, I don't like all this queen talk. It's kind of like cocky and annoying. But by the end, they were like, oh yeah, I see why she won twice. Mm. This is somebody that, like the scene, I forget who she was talking to, but that scene where at the well, where somebody said like, who are you voting for? And she's like, how about you tell me and I'll give you my thoughts. Like she completely just reversed the question so she didn't have to expose herself in any way or indict herself. And it was just such an effortless, fluid thing that like it's easier. Like to say to do that is like one thing, but to actually pull it off so effortlessly is amazing. So I was blown away by her. And I tweeted her that like I think every tribal council that she survived was another victory. Like she should have been voted off first.
She loves you also.
I love her. I will say like she, in addition to me just liking her as a player, she... I met her like, if nobody cares about this, I don't know. I wonder how much people care about any of the stuff I'm saying, but like,
they'll stop listening if they don't.
Okay. Oh, but then I feel bad that I'm responsible for people stopping listening. Is this worse, significantly worse than our last podcast?
No, it's great.
Okay. All right. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, so Sandra, I met her like after my first time playing, I was a dorky dope who like got voted off in some ignominy, if that's how you pronounce it. And like, I met her at this thing where they got like Boston Rob and Parvati and Sandra and all these big and Ozzy. And then I was there, like clearly the odd person that did not deserve to be there. And she could have easily just spent all her time chatting with all those other legends. But she like went to great lengths to engage with me and was so sweet and just like an unbelievably nice person. I don't think it was a calculated like, you know, manipulative thing. And if it was, power to her, because I was fooled and very impressed, I guess. But she was so sweet. She's amazing.
Yeah. No, she's very fond of you. She got upset with me that did you notice any tension when we were on? Because that I had done my exit interview with her and she had been I wasn't going to come on with you because I know what you've been saying. And I haven't been saying anything.
Has Steven been saying stuff?
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
Well, I get painted with the same brush.
That's the peril of associating yourself with a monster like Steven.
Like, we were getting mic'd up that day that we did the CBS, what do they call it? Beyond the Buff. I keep calling it Behind the Buff. Yeah. Beyond the Buff. And we sat down and then you guys were having a nice chat and I sat down and she said, I thought I was done talking to you today. What? I didn't do anything.
Did you have any bad blood before this?
No.
Oh my God.
No. I've been very pro Sandra.
I will say that I will take Sandra's side on this, and actually I feel bad that I'm even here right now because you should not have spoken ill of her like that.
But I don't know when it happened because I've had her on the podcast a bunch of times.
I think it must be the association with Stephen. Probably she gets tweets that say on RHAP they're saying – that's probably what happened realistically. She's probably getting tweets that say – hashtag RHAP thinks, I don't know what Stephen was saying about her, but
Stephen, I don't even think in his people blog, he was very defensive of JT.
Yeah.
But he wasn't even on the podcast the week that, the JT stuff, happened. So
yeah. Do you think he was busy celebrating? Just having a parade around town?
That's what he was doing. Yeah. Toasting. All right. So then just, quickly through the other people, who else, after,
Varner?
Yeah. I think, what did you say? What did you say? Legacy is up or down? What would you say?
It's a tough call.
Neutral.
I mean, bringing the pizza box home is a good move. So that maybe that, I don't know. I feel like probably not a bad thing.
Look, he was somebody who had never made the merge two times, made himself a household name.
Yeah. That's what everyone wants.
You know?
Yeah.
Then you have going to the merge, Haley. I think Haley is slightly up.
Yeah. Haley's a mystery to me.
She's
clearly very smart, but also very just out there. Because she has these beautiful extended metaphors and stuff.
I like her.
I like her a lot too. I wish I'd gotten to see her play more because it seemed like she was kind of just always on the outs.
But you know what her problem is? The thing that you're talking about, how being a different person to each person, she doesn't do that.
Right.
She's just Haley. Yeah. She is who she is, which is a great thing in life. But in terms of being a Survivor player,
who's good at that this season?
You need to adapt.
Ceree, right?
Ceree is probably one of the best.
She's the best ever, maybe.
Yeah. I mean, you see her with different people and she can go ahead and put on those other personas. I don't know if there's anybody else that's in the mix that I would say is also great at that. Is there anybody?
I'm just running through.
I mean, Aubrey, I think at times has been very good. Probably more in Koh Rong that she was able to, with Sydney. With Sydney, she's she's one way and she could be one way with Ty and one way with sort of Jason and Scott and with one way with Neil. I think that she probably does have that.
She's had clipped wings a little bit this season. I feel like she has not had the chance to I don't know. She does have a human metal detector for amazing alliances though. Every group she's been a part of, whether it was one of those magical fantasy alliances that only lasted for 10 seconds or one that she's actually a part of now, it's always the best collection of people. And I'm always very jealous. She's oh my God, she's playing with Ceree and all. I don't know. Who's your ideal? I don't know. Do you not give your thoughts on your ideal final three because you want to seem impartial?
Yeah, I'd like to try to...
Okay. Well, my ideal final three is Ceree, Andrea, and Aubrey.
Ceree, Andrea, Aubrey.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm not saying that's what's going to happen, but that's my dream.
I do think that one of the people that probably is good at that, this idea of adaptability, I think that Officer Sarah has been able to do that.
Is she adaptable or is she just a super level-headed, person that is good with people and has a good read on people?
I mean,
I'm not seeing a lot of dynamic changes in terms of how she behaves with one person from another.
I think that everybody feels very safe with her.
Yeah.
And everybody feels that they can confide in her.
Why do you think that is?
I think that she, one, came into the season with a really clean resume in terms of she got sort of outflanked by Tony, but I don't think that, the Kageon happened long enough ago that nobody was really focused on her.
Yeah.
She is strong. She seems trustworthy. She's seems loyal up until the point where now she's flipping. But even though she's flipping, people aren't that upset with her.
That's crazy.
She's got a lot of great ties throughout, with Ceree and Andrea and Zeke and Brad. And Ciara. So,
if you're reading the editing tea leaves, Sarah seems in a very, very good position to do well, right?
I really feel like that, yeah, Sarah and Brad, I do think, are the two of the people with the strongest edit story.
Yeah. I mean, with Sarah especially, like, because I actually think she's a great player. And having talked to people, I've heard that she just has like, an amazing dry sense of humor, but it doesn't always translate. So sometimes her interviews, like there was one last night, I forget what she was talking about, but it was like kind of like a benign, bland interview, mm-hmm. but they were playing like super dramatic mm-hmm. music behind it,
yes,
to make it sound like this kind of like ominous, like apocalyptic thing. And I just got a kick out of that.
Do you focus a lot on the edit? Is that something you, do you get into edgic?
Less from the edgic standpoint. I mean, I do that. Yeah, no, I always do it to predict winners, but I've been wrong consistently. I thought, I 100% thought it was Jay last season based on edit. Mm-hmm. I was like, no question. I was obnoxious to people and I was talking to them about it. I get into that. A thing that I actually wanted to, because I tweeted Survivor Wiki recently.
Okay.
I'm curious, do you have, or somebody then tweeted me that you have transcripts of all the final tribal councils.
Yes. You would you like them?
Yes.
Okay.
Because,
well, why?
So I'm curious about, I think that once you, I've not rewatched the tribal councils to support this theory, but I just have the idea that if you look at the cold transcripts of every tribal council, you might realize that performances that you thought or that everyone thought were either great or horrible were not actually that distinguishable from each other. You know, I think mm-hmm. that there's a lot of like, there's dramatic music playing, there's cuts to facial reactions. Like, regardless of what somebody's saying in an answer, if you cut to a juror smiling and nodding, you're immediately subconscious like, oh, wow, this is an amazing answer. They're doing a good job. I'm curious, how many of the bad answers were, objectively speaking, just based on the text, that bad? And how many of the great performances were, objectively speaking, just based on the text, that great? So I'm just curious about that from that perspective. I've always overestimated how much Final Tribal Council matters. And I'm just curious to read transcripts, because I was very proud. Like, I was very proud of my Final Tribal performance.
You had a great Final Tribal Council.
Nobody cares about it. Nobody ever mentions it, which is always a blow to my ear, because that's the one part of my game where I'm like, I thought I did a very good job. But I don't think it matters, is what I'm saying. Like, I think if you look at the great ones and compare them to the bad, I think Don had an amazing one. I actually think that if you looked at the transcripts of my answers to Don's, they would probably be not that different in quality. Sherry's, I will admit, probably would not be that great because she kind of had trouble.
Sit down, Eric.
Yeah.
I'm not answering your question.
I like that. Eric was being a little bit jerky. Yeah. So I didn't mind that.
Well, I actually say that I would beg to differ. I think that the good answers were good answers, even if you read them. Josh Wigler and I, in the Evolution of Strategy, when we go through all of the, and that's why we have the Tribal Council transcripts, is, you know, we will sort of like play act all of the
oh, really?
Tribal councils and try to, you know, do as many of the voices as we can when we go through each one of the final tribal yeah. councils.
So my theory is completely wrong.
No, I don't think it's necessarily.
Are the bad answers that bad? Because it's like, I feel like if somebody like.
Well, the bad answers tend to be, you know, that they're like, objectively bad. They're bad. They're
but are
bad
they?
Answers.
I feel like sometimes it's just because you don't like that person, and maybe like with Albert, for instance, I think he was in a lose situation no matter mm-hmm. what he said. He definitely misplayed some of his answers, but I just think he kind of, his delivery, even okay. though what the,
how about this?
Yeah.
Would you, I will provide you with all of the final tribal councils. Yeah. I think we could even get you through 33. and then at some point this summer, would you come back and talk about this?
Yeah, that sounds interesting.
I'll even Skype. You don't even have to like schlep all the way out here.
I think I like, well, the one thing I will say is like, I do like being in person because I get nervous on phone calls and okay. like Skypes. Because this is an anecdote. You can cut it out. I always order pizza. Mm-hmm. And I ordered pizza from this one place. And they said, I was like stutter on the phone. So they'd say, hey, what do you want? And I said, I'll have a pepperoni pizza. And they say, and what's your phone number? Blah, 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 blah. And then they'll say, and what's your name? Or can we have your name for pickup? And I said, Usher John. And they said, Usher John? Is your name? Your name's Usher John. And I was too scared to correct them. So then I had to pick up the pizza saying my name was Usher John. Like it said Usher John on the pizza box.
What would Usher John be? Like you work in a church?
R&B.
That might be like a cool persona to take on.
Yeah, that's my badass. Yeah. Bad boy.
I would love to hear you talk more about this. I'll send you home, take home all the PDFs.
Is this going to be homework? Am I gonna start it? Am I going to immediately realize like, wait, this is miserable.
This is a book report. Okay. Yeah. And then I would love to talk more about this. You know, just going back to, you say you feel like you don't get credit for
horrible for saying that. There's nothing worse than a freaking winner who complains about not getting credit. So I already regret saying that. Okay. There's nothing worse than it. Disgust me.
So this is Survivor 34. Yeah. Survivor 35 is filming. Survivor 36 will film in a couple of months. That's going to be 10 episode cycles since you won in Caramon. What do you feel like that your lasting impact on the game, in terms of the winning game that you played in Carcassonne, do you feel like that that has affected the, you know, we talk so much about how the game has evolved, what's changed, you know, who's responsible for what. Do you feel like that you've made a contribution to the game?
Not particularly. I mean, I wish I had an answer. When I did that Ask Me Anything on Reddit, somebody asked that question about what my legacy will be. And mine was more like story stuff. Like in terms of like actual maneuvering, I could say like it would all be very subtle things but that nobody probably cares about or picks up on that aren't that interesting. So like I obviously didn't have any big theatrical fun idol plays or anything. I emphasize timing a lot and I hear people saying it a lot now. I'm curious whether that was because I said it. That's probably me flattering myself and probably people did not care. I think the bigger thing, because I answered that question on the Reddit thing of like, I don't know, I didn't really have any. And somebody said that I may be impacted casting.
Yes, no, I agree.
So like seeing people like maybe Spencer and Aubrey and Hannah and David and maybe even Adam and stuff that maybe there were nerds before me and stuff, but I think there seemed to be a big influx of them after me.
Yeah, I think so. And I think even into Big Brother as well. I think I'm pretty sure that you played before Ian Terry.
Yeah, which was so upsetting to me because I came home and then that season was on. So my season hadn't aired. So I have to watch this freaking guy Ian win. I'm like, great, the freaking
dork. Oh, so he won Big Brother 14 before your season even came on.
Yeah.
Okay. But maybe, you know, that you had made an impact.
Or maybe my impact from a game perspective is that my type of person is now seen as threatening, whereas it wouldn't have been before. I'm not saying I am threatening. I probably won because of luck in a rigged season and stuff, but it's at least created the illusion that I'm a threat.
Right. It's interesting. I do think that in terms of like the casting in terms of a Cochran type, and now we sort of like evolved. We have like, oh, that's a female Cochran, which was probably something that you never thought you'd hear that phrase in your entire life.
That's
like people are like, oh, there's a compliment. Oh, female Cochran.
And I've liked all the female Cochran, so.
Yeah, so I think that that's been important. I'm trying to think of like in terms of like a move. I feel like that if anything, the move with you that gets talked about is probably more from South Pacific in terms of the flip. Do you feel like that had an impact on the game in terms of, do you think that kept people from flipping or that inspired more flips like Cass in Kagyan?
I think it inspired, I feel like you see more people say flippers don't win after that. Like,
yeah.
I feel like that was not part of the Survivor vocabulary quite as much before I did it and it worked out badly.
Because in some ways, it's sort of at loggerheads with gotta make big moves. Make big moves. It was a little bit like Cochran did this and then got, you know, slapped down. Yeah. That everybody got mad at him. He didn't win. It's a cautionary tale. As opposed to now, here we are, you know, 4.5 years later, and got to make big moves. Got to be aggressive. Got to flip.
Yeah,
you know.
I wonder how much of that is just like pandering, knowing that Jeff likes that, and saying that because you know Jeff likes that is what I'm curious about. Like, how, again, the idea of a big move.
See, I think that the big moves era actually begins after Survivor Carcassonne. And again, you know, Malcolm with the Three Amigos and stuff like that. Like, you know, the big moves.
What are examples of big moves? I'm still confused what big moves are.
Going to Rocks. Sierra goes to Rocks.
Okay, Sierra
votes out her mom. I mean, you don't get bigger than that. Tony comes along in season 28. That's, you know, more big moves.
Oh, no, but what you're just saying big moves. What's like the actual action that is the big move?
Well, Sierra forcing the rock draw.
Yeah, okay. Beyond rock draws.
Okay. Then Tony comes along and then is, you know, constantly, you know, a bag of tricks. And
no, but you're saying you're being vague. I want to hear
the specific moves that were big moves. I think that, I mean, when you look back to Survivor Kagyan, I think he points at Tony at 9 and 7 and 5 and voting out LJ.
So voting out allies, which is stuff that has gone back. We voted out Brenda and Andrea and stuff. Like, it, and people did it. History for eras and eons before me. That's the thing. I think it's about presentation of an otherwise benign move is what makes it a big move. Because Tony,
you think it's the branding has changed on it?
Yeah, well, because Tony is naturally such an electric personality that's so big, and he's saying bag of tricks and saying all this stuff. It seems like a much bigger move, and they are powerful, effective moves. But the actual mechanism that he's acting through is just like, oh, I'm voting out somebody that thought I was with them.
Mm-hmm.
Like, okay. It worked out well and he won, but in terms of like Gun Rocks, which I agree, or something like the playing two idols and your entire group's immune. I don't see what a big move is. Mm-hmm. And this is not me disagreeing with Jeff. I agree that you have to make moves, but just what a big move is. It's like, it's easy to say that, yeah, Tony, because Tony's a big move. But like, what else is a big, I hope you don't find this like that I'm being combative, but like, I'm actually passionate. I'm just like interested in it.
Yeah. I think it's a fascinating discussion. I just think that at the time that big moves started to be celebrated, like these are the examples of the things that were cited as the big moves.
All right. In terms of the celebration of it, that definitely is a recent phenomenon. But in terms of what...
And I also think it's interesting that this season, in that two-hour episode, that 500th episode of the show, you had two of the faces on the Mount Rushmore of big moves end up going out back-to-back in this season, where people were having none of, you know, these are the people that make the big moves.
And you think that was a very, so is this kind of a return to back to the egg?
I mean, I've been saying for a couple of seasons now, I think that really the paradigm has shifted back to the Jeremy Collins, to the Michelle Fitzgerald, the person who is not necessarily overtly making the big moves, but the person who I feel safe and comfortable around, the person that is making me feel at ease.
Well, that's the ego thing I'm talking about. That's like, and I feel like that's what wins the game. Because look, here's the thing. Like when you're playing Survivor, maybe 0.001% of your time out there is spent making moves of any sort. The vast, vast, vast majority of your time is just sitting around hanging out with these people, maybe having strategic conversations. You can't tell me that somebody's going to vote for somebody to win based on that 0.001% if they were unpleasant to be around for the 99.999% of the rest of the time. So, like, I think the Jeremy Collins, Michelle Fitzgerald, Fitzgerald's your last name?
Yeah.
Michelle Fitzgerald's, like, that is probably the more... That's consistently going to be the winning game. Not I can, you know, carve an idol out of a canteen or something.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I have a lot of questions.
Wait, is this like wrapping up now?
No, I mean, I have six pages of questions
I wanted this to be 8.5 hours long. I wanted it to be that people went to bed listening to it and woke up and we were still talking.
Okay, well,
How long have we been going?
I mean, what are we, like an hour?
This is nothing. Hour and a half, this is nothing. We did 3-something hours last time.
Yeah, I think the whole show was 3-something hours, but I think that it was a good chunk of it was Nicole.
Okay.
So we're doing fine. I have so many questions.
Are these questions you wrote or questions?
No, these are questions that the listeners wrote.
Are they mean?
I have to ask Alex Kidwell if they're mean or not.
Oh, it's Alex Kidwell. Okay.
Yes.
You introduced Alex and I know. Oh, Alex Kidwell, of course.
Yes. Yes. He's out there listening to voicemails.
Oh.
I mean, if we run out of questions.
Why did I not do voicemails?
Some people think there's a bit of a stigma that they want to be in the, you know, the first guest and not on the recap voicemail show.
I don't see this. I feel like that you're directly engaging with people. That's, if anything, probably a...
Hey, whenever you want to come back in 2020 and do the voicemails,
this is just progressive. I'm going to be doing voicemails. Then I'm doing a book report for you on Tribal Council. Then I'm going to like have to like hand stitch buffs for you. I don't know where this is going.
Okay. Let's see. All right. Lawson Campbell writes in, game changers or idiots? Did you agree with your girl Debbie's sentiment last night?
I'm not sure who she was referring to with that, I think was the puzzle for me. Was she saying that collectively about the whole group of people? Just having my brief time with Debbie makes me think that that is what she was saying. Kind of like my guess is around back at Ponderosa. I've not been watching the Ponderosas, but my guess is there's probably jokes about like, yeah, get a load of those game changers over there. So I think Haley was actually probably saying it sarcastically. And then Debbie in a kind of knowing way is like, yeah, no, believe it. We all know they're all idiots. I don't think they're idiots.
Everybody on the jury is so smart.
Well, that's the other thing. Like, suddenly, like, Ozzy's, like, super animated and stuff. Like, he goes from, like, being such a laid-back guy. Yeah. That's again, it's gif-able.
You know, we haven't talked a lot about Ozzy.
Oh, yeah, I played with Ozzy.
Yeah. What did you see from Ozzy 4.0? Because I've said that I feel like that, you know, it was not that different a version of Ozzy.
No, it was absolutely the same old Ozzy.
Yes.
If anything, it was... a return to like Cook Islands. The fact that his parting words were like about food and getting fish and
right,
stuff.
Right. But I do feel like that where I in the beginning of the season, I said that Ozzy needs to get back to Cook Islands. Ozzy, I think he just needs to, you know, be like, don't be like pissing people off and like over strategizing.
Yeah.
I think that that's not a great look for him. And I thought that he came across as pretty likable in this season.
No, he seems super likable.
Just nobody forgot he was a threat this time,
right?
And then he didn't win all the challenges.
Yeah, can he win Survivor without winning every single challenge?
Yeah,
is it possible?
It's possible. I had thought for Ozzy, I thought he was sort of like old news, and I thought people were going to say, ah, Ozzy can't win the game. Don't worry about him. Like, so what if he wins some challenges? He's not going to win. He doesn't have a good social game. He won't win. Nobody thought of him that way.
Yeah. It's true. Well, I think you're looking for anything to latch onto for a reason to be a threat, and so you're not likely to forget something like somebody being the greatest challenge performer of all time.
Yeah. So how do you deal with that as a survivor? If everybody's looking for who's the threat, do you just need to just be like the most average person?
No, that's it rewards middle of the pack in terms of personality, in terms of challenge performance. You don't want to be a barnacle being dragged along in challenges at the beginning, and you don't want to be an overt threat later on. So yeah, just being middle of the road, being even keeled. I'm curious, if I were like a big buff person, I'm curious how different my game would have to be, because like so much of my strategy is emphasizing what a loser I am. Mm-hmm. And if I weren't a loser, I don't know what I would do. That's a completely different approach.
But you even say that you've changed it for the person who goes out there and says what a loser they am, because now that person's
It's a drag. Yeah, no, I feel like, yeah, because like now it's like, okay, that person's going to have a panic attack in the first episode and maybe have like an arc later on where suddenly they win a few immunities and maybe, yeah, there is like a very prototypical nerd butterfly transformation chrysalis thing that I don't know. I feel bad now if I'm the reason that some people are getting voted off. But no, they tend to be doing disproportionately well, right? I feel like the nerds have been like always either approaching final tribal.
You've paved the way.
Yeah. Oh, that's a nice thought. That's actually, if I have to have a legacy, I would like it to be that.
Yeah. Well, it's nice to have a legacy.
Yeah. Because the only thing if people come up to me, it's funny. Like, well, people, they'll either remember the sunburn stuff is the main thing.
Right.
Or they'll just look at me and know that I look nerdy, and they'll be like, oh yeah, I remember you were great at puzzles, right? I'm like, not really. Not especially.
Not really your claim to fame.
And then I walked outside a few days ago, and there's this construction worker, this like real gruff guy, and he said, hey, where do I know you from? And I told him, and he said, oh yeah, you are a real wordsmith.
Wordsmith?
Yeah. But like, he said it kind of sarcastically. I was like... Like, yeah, you
like,
think
like
you're a real
throwing shade?
Yeah, like you're a real brainiac, you freaking loser. I think that was how I interpreted it. Maybe I'm just like hyper paranoid.
Did you have to unscramble a word?
I would actually have been good at that. I'm the only thing I'm good at is like word games. Mm-hmm. I'm not good at anything. And slide puzzles. You can, for people listening online, YouTube search, and if you were going to be on the show, YouTube search how to solve a slide puzzle. It's like a very simple mechanic that, for those who don't know, Rob just coughed. He's like a regular Tazan Day leaning away from the microphone.
Chocolate rain.
Yeah.
You were talking about slide puzzles word puzzles.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. The legacy, right. No, so I'm very happy if my legacy is...
But going back to word puzzles, I feel like I would be very good at that also. We had a word find on Survivor of the Amazon, and I was
They
like
used to do that.
I was good at that.
That's when the challenges were like kids' menus from restaurants.
Right, right.
It was like a maze. And
I had such a happy moment the other day that I was for some reason I installed the Wheel of Fortune app on my phone. Yeah. And I had that on my phone, and I was playing with it, and then because I have one Apple ID, and then Dominic has an iPad, and then so that when I install an app, it gets installed on the iPad, and he saw that I was playing that game, and then he brought me the iPad. He's like, Dad, can we play this game?
Oh my God, that's amazing.
We play this game with it. I was like, yes. Oh, I'm so happy. Nicole wants him to like throw a baseball, but I was just like so happy he wanted to play Wheel of Fortune.
That he has developed enthusiasm for a show watched primarily by people in their 80s is like a thrill.
He was really into it.
What letters do you choose for the RSTLNE round on average?
You know, really,
CDMA?
I feel like, CDM, I think.
Yes, yeah, and then the vowel.
Yeah, and then what are you supposed to pick there? O?
I said CDMA is what I typically go for, but, you know, it's all contextual. You see it based on what the R is.
Right, I sort of like them looking for something that, like, if I have a guess or already going into it. Yeah.
There's this fun game called Stop that I've been playing.
Stop?
Yeah, I've been playing with Andrea.
How do you play?
So it's similar to some board game whose name I forget, but it'll give you like, you spin a wheel, it lands on a letter, then it gives you a list of categories. It'll say like US presidents, famous video game franchises, TV shows, and you have to come up for each category with an answer that starts with the letter that you spun.
It's like categories?
It's categories, yeah. That's the one it's like. But like you get special extra points for a rare answer, so you're incentivized to kind of come up with interesting ones. And then you do it against somebody. I don't know. It's a very fun game. I recommend it.
Okay, I will check it out. Stop. I'll play it. Yeah. I don't have any other friends that know it. So.
What's your friend situation?
I have none.
Okay.
I have none.
Do you talk about that often?
I mean, I'll talk about it sometimes. I mean, it's somewhat troubling.
You have a family though.
I have a family. That's the thing. Like, I'm not that fun.
You seem like a fun guy.
I guess so. I mean, thank you for saying that. But yeah, I mean, I'm really not.
So,
that
so you don't
fun.
You don't like call up Alonzo and say, "Brewskis are on me, brother." Let's
Alonzo Bowden.
I don't know. I don't know. I chose
no, really, I don't go out really ever drinking or anything like that. And
do you go to raves?
Yeah.
What sort of music do you listen to? I have a hard time imagining you like grooving around to music.
I'm going to Billy Joel at Dodger Stadium in 2 weeks.
What's your favorite Billy Joel song?
It changes. Yeah.
Just the Way You Are?
No, that's a little too schmaltzy. Yeah. So many different ones. It's hard to really.
Will you dance in the crowds and sing along?
I mean, I might sway. I might sing during Piano Man.
I get self-cut. Like, I was talking to somebody else about this a couple days ago. Like, anything that requires like crowd participation, like when somebody's like, "I want you to scream," like I hate that, and I never scream. I'll open my mouth to pretend like I'm making noise, but not do it.
Right.
And I get nervous about dancing. I have lots of weird things like that.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not a dancer, certainly. Yeah. Clearly. I mean, I'm sure this is a surprise.
Will Nicole dance?
I mean, I don't think. Is there a lot of dancing at the concert?
I don't know. People kind of bop around. Like, I'm not saying like complicated choreography.
You know, a lot of like bopping around songs.
Like Uptown Girl.
Yeah, I guess so. But yeah,
still rock and roll to me?
I maybe.
Jeez, oh, you're a freaking. Hard to please.
you're asking my favorite song, or what song am I going to dance to?
I don't care either.
I'm probably not going to dance to any.
What
of
was
songs.
Your first dance at your wedding?
That it was my wedding song.
Yeah,
yeah. Shania Twain.
Oh my god.
Looks Like We Made It.
I don't know that one. Is that a very famous song? I don't know Shania Twain very. I just know Man, I Feel Like a Woman.
Yeah. Look.
Is that a personal favorite of yours or Nicole's? Or
you know what? I really do like the song, but I think that the message, it's a spiteful message to people. Like the song is like, looks like we made it. We beat the odds together. Like, I'm glad we didn't listen. Just like Andrea says to me, I'm glad we didn't listen. Look, it's almost like,
it's like us against the world kind of.
That said, oh yeah, don't marry this guy.
That's romantic though. It's like a Bonnie and Clyde. Like, screw you guys.
Right, screw everybody.
Yeah. And that's why you don't have any friends.
Right, right.
It's like, I have my family.
I don't have any close friends.
I'm not saying that in a bashing way. I'm very much the same way. I'm like, but I don't even have a family. I'm just sitting alone in my apartment eating Kit Kat bars. And now I guess reading transcripts. That's the most heartbreaking image. Me eating Kit Kat bars, reading transcripts of final tribal councils.
Would it be less depressing with a different candy bar?
What would be a more exciting one? Maybe like a Twix?
Yeah. I will say I am very fortunate that I have a career that I'm passionate about, and it really does consume all of my time
with
my family. And I get to like do podcasts with many fun people like yourself, and I have a lot of recurring podcast that I do with people that I enjoy.
Yeah, so you're not leading a cloistered existence. You're talking to people every day.
No, but I don't really have a lot of like interaction in the person.
Would you want that, or is it not a desire you have? Is this weird to be talking about? Do you not want to talk about this?
No, I'll talk about it. It's not necessarily like I don't really want to go anywhere.
That's my thing. I never want to go anywhere. Yeah. That's like, I've actually stopped dating recently in the last month or so because like, I have like 5 or 6 dates worth of personality, after which it becomes very clear that I am like a recluse that never wants to go outside or do anything except nap and watch Jeopardy.
Right.
Would
that be ideal if you found somebody who was also like,
oh my
that?
God, that'd be like, just like having a, you know, it's like John and Yoko had their bed in for peace or that's all. Right. I just want like a bed in with somebody.
And, right. You know, it's one of the things that I feel is very unappealing about, you know, dating. You know, you meet these women and then they want to like go places.
Well, it's like until, you know, I just deleted all the swipey apps, but like all the profiles say like, I'm looking for adventure and stuff. Like, that's the last thing I want.
Right.
I don't want to go outside. I don't want to see other people. Like, I don't want to have to put on pants at any point. That's a big, like, that's always a big obstacle for me. Like, I don't have to put on pants to go outside. Like, that's the huge hurdle I have to overcome. But generally when I do something, I'm happy I did it, but it's just getting myself to do it. But like, I'll go days without talking to anybody. Like, it's not a joke. When I tweet pictures of like, I'll get 10 steps a day when I'm just like on the weekends and stuff.
Well, in terms of your work, though, do you write all from your house?
right now, yeah, because I'm doing like a pilot development thing. So that's actually one of the, I go crazy when like, that's sitcom staffing, thank God, because of the strike not happening. That's starting like in the next couple of weeks. So I'll go out for that. But during the pilot development, you're just like stuck alone in a room. It's very, I don't know, I've started talking to myself, which is not, oh yeah, I have a question actually. This is, yeah. If you don't answer this, I asked somebody else this recently. Like, I've never lived with anybody. I've never had a roommate in my life, even in college and law school. Like, and I have very weird habits. Like, did you, before moving in with Nicole, were there any certain, I'm not talking about like scatological bathroom stuff. Did you have any like habits that you were, had to change or like dramatically alter your behavior in any way?
I'm trying to think if there's anything.
Like for me, just like I dance around for like no reason. Mm-hmm. I will like narrate things I'm doing in kind of a sing-songy voice. Like if I was, this is always going to make me sound like a freaking lunatic. I'm hoping somebody listening to this will reach out and be like, you're not alone.
You're not alone.
But then I'm not going to get that and it's going to be devastating. But like, I was like, I have this like hand soap and it was like peach Bellini, not flavor, but like whatever, scented. Mm-hmm. And like I was watching, and just the word Bellini was resonating with me. So I'm washing my hand going like, Bellini? I don't know. It's like saying, but I'm like alone in my apartment saying that. It's like depressing. Like if there was like a GoPro recording it, it would be the most heartbreaking image.
You know, I do a lot of talking to myself, especially like when I'm like trying to workshop an impression. I will like be
That's an understandable reason for it.
Okay.
Though.
Well, that's it. But not necessarily. It might not be an impression for the podcast. That might be just like somebody that
Okay.
I might be like doing different things, or like somebody like on a TV show that has nothing to do with something I'm podcasting or stuff like that. So I do a lot of like talking to myself. I certainly do a lot of ranting to myself about things. But
like self-critical commentary or complaining about like.
No, usually others. Okay. It's very unproductive. Yeah.
Okay.
But no, I wouldn't say there's anything. Yeah, and Nicole and I have always, like, in living together, we have always, every a living space that we've all had has always had two bathrooms. So that's also,
oh, that's wonderful. Yeah.
You know, she sort of like has her own bathroom. I have no idea what goes on in there, and that's, I have amazing. No interest either.
Yeah.
And so we sort of had like a lot of like the key to my marriage has always been a lot of space.
Okay, good. Yeah.
That's
and minimal communication.
Right.
No communication, no space, like separate living arrangements ideally.
Yes. And, I mean you're here at my house. I mean it's really like I have my own like apartment upstairs.
Yeah.
And then I go downstairs and go you know, visit my family, and then I come back upstairs to my house that I live in.
That's a great existence. I love it. This is a nice little sanctuary.
It's not bad. It's
Dude, did she watch the show with you?
No.
Oh, really?
No, I watch on the East Coast time. Okay. And ideally I would have a separate entrance and a small kitchenette up here, but you know, that's, you know, life goals.
Do people like getting glimpses? I'm curious about this stuff. Will listeners be excited to hear about this stuff? Or are they like, come on, get back to the talking about whether Troy Zane is going to play his idol next week.
Is Troy Zane going to play his idol next week?
Who cares? Right. I mean, like that's my philosophy. Who cares?
I mean, we can just speculate on things.
Yeah. Well, like Troy Zane, I will say, when I was doing my little, Instagram stalking before I came here, I was looking at Troy Zane's Instagram and I love Troy Zane. I will say like,
first off, who doesn't?
Well, I think it's hard. Like the thing is, he hasn't been super duper visible this season, and you can't point to that many strategic things yet. But I will say, and this will sound like not a huge compliment, but for me, it actually really, really is. Like he just has this infectious enthusiasm and is happy to be playing, which is a quality that I'm always drawn to, and it's shockingly rare in viewers, and especially on returning player seasons, because everyone comes back and it's such a freaking business.
All business,
yeah, and it's like. All returning player seasons, they tend to be great, but they also tend to be less fun. Like, I think if you look back at like this, Heroes, Villains, Cambodia, also, there's always a certain weight and gravity to the season that makes, like, you don't get, I mean, I guess you got the Tuk Tuk and stuff. Was that Cambodia?
Yeah, but it's
shocking. It's very rare. So I just love, like, he's happy to be there. Just like the grin and spin thing. I don't know. I really, really like him, but his Instagram is funny to me because he posts, I guess it's before like every episode, he'll post these like teaser images that are just like, it'll be like a nondescript picture of him like sitting in a tree, and then it'll have like a caption put on it that says like, things heat up. And then it'll say like the time and date that Survivor's on, as though people following Troy Zane aren't aware when it's on.
What time is Survivor on this week?
Yeah. But it's like a weird, it seems like something I would have seen on the internet like maybe in 1999.
Yeah.
But it's like,
he's behind the times in terms of social media.
Well, he mentioned Twitter last night, so I guess he's catching up. I love him though. I need to text him. He's great.
Yeah. And good for Troy Zane, where I really thought that he was going to flame out this season.
In what way? Like, spectacularly blow up and stuff?
Yeah, I really thought that he was going to not have a deep run in him in this season. And here he is. I mean, that we haven't seen a hint of any of the issues that plagued him in the end of One World.
I think maybe part of that is the benefit of being on, I mean, up until this point, at least on the right side of the numbers. Like, being in, as part of that male slaughter in One World, I think, brought out the kind of... Mm-hmm. I mean, you saw, like, a brief... Was it him? When he was talking about Brad, he was like, oh, it's nice to have another man around... camp or something.
Mm-hmm.
But it was just the two. Was it them?
Yeah, they were the only two guys on that second swap tribe.
Yeah, so clearly he has his preferences in terms of who he's aligned with. But no, he's been a much more kind of subdued guy.
Are you close with Troyzan?
No, why? Because I alluded to texting him.
Yeah.
He texts. I don't reply to texts like ever. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And he's texted, and I feel bad. I just the fact that I'm mentioning him and now he's going to hear this and he's going to be like, why didn't you respond to my text? If you're reading my, if you're looking at my freaking Instagram like a lunatic, why don't you respond to text? I just don't respond. I have severe social issues where I don't like texting people.
Yeah. But is that a crutch though?
As opposed to what? As opposed to like just a mental illness?
No, I feel like that, that just to say like, you know, you can kind of get out of anything.
Oh, it's an excuse?
It's almost like, yeah, it's like a doctor's note.
No. I mean, I'm not excusing it. It's like inappropriate bad behavior that has like cost me friendships and I've gotten into arguments over it. But for me, it's like, I think, again, I don't like going outside. So like, I think my thing is like, I'm virtually always in bed and I'm like, I'll see a text go off. I'll read it. And I'll be like, okay, if I respond to this, there's like a 10% chance that this is going to result in me having to go outside. Because the conversation is going to get started. They're going to say, oh, well, if you're in town, let's go to, you know,
right,
whatever. I don't know a place for people. That's how little I got. I can't even come up with like any sort of destination where someone would go. But like, so it's that's the reason for it. Like, and then I was Malcolm like tweeted a picture of me not responding to his text and kind of publicly shaming
you,
me for
right,
it.
Right.
And then I did reply to him. And of course, you know, he was texting me because he wanted to crash at my place for several days. So like that was the penalty I got for responding to a text.
Yeah.
He stayed in my apartment at my tiny studio in New York for like a few days. But he was actually a very good guest. He like made my bed for me.
Whoa.
Which does that mean? Like, I actually found that slightly weird.
Yeah.
That's weird, right?
I think I wouldn't make somebody
else's
bed.
Does that mean that he got in the bed?
I mean, was the bed made when you...
No, like, I don't make my bed.
So, like, were you at work and he was there?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it means he slept in your bed.
Did he defile my bed well, and then make it to cover up the...
Why did he defile it? Did he bring somebody back to your...
No, I didn't mean to say that. No. I don't know. He did, like, because what little alcohol I had in my place, he drank and he replaced it. And then he got me a frozen pizza because I eat frozen pizzas. So he was a great house guest.
Yeah.
Apart from, like, having an orgy in my bed, which I guess is what happened.
Yes. You said it was a tiny apartment. How many people?
It was a studio.
Yeah.
It was a tiny little studio. And he was sleeping at my feet on the couch.
Okay. Jim Rosario wants to ask you.
Did we answer that last question?
I think so. Okay. Who even remembers what it was?
They asked about your marriage, right? Was that what the question was?
Jim Rosario says, how did you like Sarah taking credit for the flip at camp and at tribal? So interestingly, a different scenario than you were in back at South Pacific. after tribal council, she said, okay, if anybody was wondering who flipped, I did.
I think she handled,
very proactive.
She handled it beautifully. I mean, you don't want there to be an argument and then people are getting all their tempers flaring and then you'd be like, yeah, actually about that, it was me. You know, she beat the story.
Wait, is that you?
Always me. Yeah. I don't know. The scary thing is like, you know, you leave tribal council and you can't talk for a little bit because you're going back to camp. And I had to stand separate from everyone else because there was like actually people were worried that I was going to get beat up. Like I think the producers or the security people were like worried, so I had to like stand apart from everyone because I was legitimately scared. So yeah, no, I got back to camp and I think Jim said that my parents are going to be ashamed of me and like
yeah, sure,
and like I don't know all this stuff. Ozzy was actually shockingly to Ozzy's credit, and I think it's because he's played before and he's been betrayed before. He was like totally cool with me about it.
Yeah,
like not happy about it, but like
he got it.
I mean, he was just like, ah, man, why'd you do that? But not like, you know,
right.
Super. No, I think Sarah did a great job. The fact that there has been no fallout from that, there must have been more conversations that we didn't see. I don't know. Or she's like, or it's the fact that it's a returning player season. Is that sort of behavior excusable? Like, what's the history of people flipping in a returning player season?
people flipping in a returning player season. Well, really nobody did in Survivor All-Stars, famously. Right. And then, well, Ozzy certainly, like, he was not happy with, you know, Parvati and Suri when. So it's like, oh, he almost, like, has been through the wars before. He's this is kind of
old hat still coming back.
Yeah. And then in terms of, did anybody really flip during Heroes versus Villains? I think like Sandra was trying to.
Like Candace was trying to. Yeah, I was going to say Candace was the only thing.
But yeah, it doesn't really happen that often.
But maybe it's more excuse. Maybe because it's not a new player season, maybe people don't look at it as the horrific betrayal. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. Or maybe Sarah just handled it beautifully. I think she did a great job.
Mm-hmm.
She's doing a great, great job.
Yeah. Good work so far for Sarah. Matt Price wants to know, is there a less exciting reward food to promote than chicken wraps?
Let's see. Do you have a thought on that?
Yeah, I think there's a lot. Chicken wrap is great. I think there were no complaints by the chicken wraps.
I remember one reward was like these shish kebab things that I remember like I was not in the mood for. I was like, I was actually kind of like, oh, I don't know. I think I just like, and the drinks were like all these margaritas and stuff. And I just wanted Coca-Cola. So I had to like, I had to ask somebody special, like, can you just give me a Coke? Like, I don't even really want these shish kebabs. At least give me a, can a fella get a Coca-Cola around here? Jeez. Mm-hmm. So, worst things to promote, I would say those shish kebabs.
Shish kebabs is like, the worst.
Actually, pizza historically on Survivor is known for being horrific.
Yeah, but you love pizza. As a pizza connoisseur,
yeah.
Would you still eat the bad Survivor pizza or you'd rather something else?
Maybe I'd probably rather something else, because I feel like a bad, like, yeah, I know, I feel like it's actually your expression where you say that Survivor is like pizza, there's no such thing as a bad, whatever.
I think I have said that one, like,
I think you say it virtually every day, from what I understand, from what Steven tells me.
I think I've said it maybe once or twice, and it's been quoted a lot.
Okay, all right, I've had very, very bad pizzas before, and it's like a horrible feeling when you wait all this time and you're sitting in your apartment and the delivery person comes and you open up the box and it's a freaking gross pie.
Who's your preferred pizza vendor? Do you go Domino's? Like, I feel like I've seen you like on on Snapchat and stuff ordering a lot of Domino's.
Yeah. By the way, if you want to follow me on, if you want to see like me just aiming my camera at the like pizza tracker, follow me on social media. Domino's, I do. I like their homemade, their handmade pan pizza is actually shockingly good.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't found like a good like local place either, because I feel like in LA it's all healthy pizza. Mm-hmm. I don't really like the thin crust stuff.
Okay,
I like Papa John's. I like the garlic dipping sauce. I think Domino's is actually the game changer for Domino's was a few years ago where they changed the ingredients and now they're like standard pizza is actually quite good.
Okay, all right.
How many slices of pizza do you typically eat if you order a pizza?
Yeah, probably like three. Is it like a healthy, like, we have a pretty decent pizza place that we get over here, but it's not like a Domino's. Like, that's like a little triangle.
Oh, so what's yours? Yours are not triangles?
No, they're triangle, but I feel like I'll get like, what is it? Like,
oh,
18,
it's like the big, okay, yeah.
Like,
and it's slopping down when you're picking
right,
up.
Like a New York pizza.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I eat the entire pizza.
An entire Domino's, a medium or large?
It's a large.
Yeah.
I ate the entire. I'm gonna die
soon. But you eat like a snake, where you like ingest like one big meal a day, right?
Yeah, I'm trying to fix that. That's part of my like 30-year-old reinvention. That's what the deviated septum thing was.
That you ate too much?
No, not that I eat too much, but that like my eating habits.
Oh, you're going to be a new person at 30.
Just like that, it's no longer cute for me to eat 12 tacos by myself. Not that it was ever cute, but at least it was kind of like a funny, quirky thing. Now it's like I'm a 30-year-old. Person, I didn't even say man, you know, I'm like a 30-year-old thing, and like I can't be doing that, so I don't know, maybe I'll get healthy. I probably won't.
Yeah, I mean, just go with it. I mean,
I'm very squishy though.
You're squishy.
Yeah, like if you see me from a distance, you're like, oh, he's a skinny guy, but then if you get close and you like, mm-hmm. and I give you permission, like you will right. squeeze my belly. And
do
it's,
you still work out? I remember the last time you were, I think it was that you said that Greg Garcia made you get a personal trainer.
I did that for like 6 months, and there was a brief period where I was like a freaking monster.
So what happened?
What did happen? I think I probably went into a depressive spiral. Didn't want to go outside anymore. It's a pain in the ass. It never reached that point. I feel like everyone always says like, oh, at a certain point you can't live without it. It's just like built into it. Like, no, every single time it was miserable and I hated it. And like the transformation wasn't that gratifying that I felt the need to keep doing. But now I wish I had it. I was doing that New York Times is like a 6-minute workout thing.
6-minute workout.
Yeah.
And in the newspaper?
Yeah. It was first highly publicized in the newspaper, but there's like, yes, an app you can get. And like, if you do it like three times back to back, it actually is shockingly exhausting.
Mm-hmm.
And I put on, like, I have a little playlist on my phone that's like get pumped music.
Right.
And I don't know. That's valuable. I have no funny conclusion to this. I just like, no, I'm in horrible shape and I eat poorly and I'm depressed. Is that what you want me to tell you, Rob?
No, come on. But you're still depressed?
No, well, no, I'm clinically depressed. Right. There's no external factor where I'm like, oh, I'm real bummed about this. I'm very low. Why am I talking about this? This is like a horrible way to sell myself as an engaging, charismatic person. No, I just always look very like, I'm very tired all the time, mm-hmm, you know, and very easily socially exhausted. Like it took me 3 years to come back here because I was still recovering from the last podcast. So this is like all the talking I'm going to do for a month, I think.
Yeah. Well, it's helpful for me, though, because then I feel like that you must have had a bad time last time that you didn't.
No,
you
no,
didn't
I
come
had
back
a
for
wonderful,
so long.
No, no, no. Look, here's my.
And then I feel like I'm annoying you. And then because I have that built into me where I'd say, oh, OK, because, you know, when, you know, my parents would tell me like, oh, you're so annoying. Yeah. And then my wife tells me constantly, you're so annoying. Uh-huh. So I just think, oh, I annoy all these people.
No, well, first of all, you never really asked me back again. I will say, like, I don't recollect ever getting a text that was like, can you come back again? And I don't know whether I would have said yes or no, but I don't think I was ever invited back. So it's not as though I was like ignoring all these invitations. I don't think. Am I wrong? Maybe you invited me.
Well, I think that we had some interactions where I distinctly, like, I saw you at the Game Changers finale.
All right.
And you were like, hey, like you had said to me, like, hey, let's get together.
Oh, really?
And I was like, Cochran, you don't have to say it just to be nice. Like, if you don't mean it, don't say it. Just don't say it. And you're like, no. I mean it. Let's get together. Let's do something.
That's just me playing to your ego.
Yeah. And I was like, okay, I'm giving you a full amnesty. I won't be mad. You could just say you don't want to do something. And you're like, no, seriously.
Oh, let's, God, let's I'm the do worst. Something.
And then, so I said, okay. So, and then the next day I texted you.
Yeah. And I never heard that sounds right. I'm like a horrific flake, too.
Yeah.
I think the biggest part of it, legitimately, is that like.
And you've been very busy.
I've been very, well, I was also, here's actually the biggest thing.
Yeah.
And I think I mentioned this last time I was on, like, especially when I was in New York. I've been frequently watching Survivor on the weekends.
Right.
Like, I'm watching it several days late. This is the first season in a while where I'm actually watching on Wednesday nights. But I will say, like, the first time I was on, I had a great time, and like, people seemed to like it. Like, people sent me nice tweets and stuff.
Yeah, at one point, it was the most listened to podcast that we had done.
Who's passed it?
I mean,
tons of people. Don't tell me. I don't want to hear. I'll be jealous of them.
Well, I mean, that was 3 years ago. The show grows.
Yeah. Well, so
it's not like television where every year, like, right, things get lower.
Well, that's great. I mean, it's a testament to the fact that you're continually getting more viewers.
And if it continues at this trend in 4,000 years, it'll be the same.
Well, so what I'm saying, though, is it was such a good experience. And it's the same philosophy I kind of have with Survivor. It's like, I don't want to ruin a good thing. Why come back and have a thing where I ramble about being depressed and my horrible eating habits? This is only going to be a negative experience.
Right.
I've actually enjoyed it greatly. We'll keep going, right? We're about like a third of the way through.
I think a quarter.
Okay. Even better.
The quarter, Paul. Okay.
Are people going to enjoy this? You have a sense of what people like.
Yeah, I think that there will be some people that will say, like, you call that a Survivor podcast? And there'll be some people say this was their favorite episode.
No, why are people going to say you call that a Survivor podcast?
Because there's some people that you can't, first off, you can't make everybody happy.
No, but I want to.
Well, there's too many people that listen. You can't make them all happy. And so, and then I'll say, well, then, you know, good thing there's only like 900 other Survivor podcasts.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
This is the only one that has Cochran this week. You're not doing a different podcast this week,
No,
right?
I don't do podcasts. No, I never do any of this stuff.
Yeah.
Is baby Dominic named after Dom and Colin?
Yes.
Okay, cool.
Yes.
Cool. That's nice.
Nicole wanted to name him Colin, and I said, no, Dom, I got to go, like, the Dom sounds classier.
And Anthony is Anthony Robinson or Papa Bear Anthony Caruso?
Anthony Caruso.
Okay.
Yeah, Papa Bear.
Okay, cool.
Okay. Let's...
Did you ever go by Robbie growing up, or were you always Robbie?
My parents, like, really only called me Robbie. And I was Robbie all through my brother and sister called me Robbie. Nicole calls me Robbie.
Oh, really?
Yeah. that everybody does in my immediate family. My grandmother calls me Robbie, my aunt and uncle, but you know, I never have told anybody that that's what my name is.
Like, has anyone ever called you Robert, or is that not part of your?
Not really. Nobody ever really calls me Robert. No, I never Bob or Bobby or anything like
Bob's
that.
Bob's a completely different name to me. I don't even see them. I get that they share, they etymologically share the same root, but Bob, you are not Bob.
I was telling Dominic that you were coming over today.
Oh, really?
And I said that Dominic, my friend Cochran, is coming over. And
he said, you don't have any friends, Daddy.
No,
that's a lie.
No. He said, oh, Cochran. That's like cockroach.
Oh.
He's very into bugs.
A compliment?
He's very into all types of bugs. So that was like,
I wish I could say that was the first time I was called a cockroach, but no, it's
well, that really does impress him. Yeah. It feels like you're like some sort of superhero.
Right. Okay.
So that was really good. Any insect, he's really fascinated.
Really?
With.
Do you enjoy that passion of his, or do you not enjoy being near the bugs?
No, it sort of has made me like when I see a bug, I'm like, oh, okay, I can call him and get him.
That's
he
cool.
likes, wants to walk around the house with a bug in a plastic
I
cup.
Saw this on your Snapchat story. You had one that where it was like, what do you, what, I forget what you said, you like asked him what he liked or something, and he said bugs or something. It was cute.
Yes, we wander the neighborhood aimlessly looking for insects. Yeah. He says, Dad, we're on a bug watching expedition.
Jeez, where did you learn the word expedition?
I don't know.
How old is he?
He's three.
Three?
Yes. Again, very into.
So was he watching Expedition Impossible? Is that how he knows it?
Maybe. Okay. Jason Oreck wants to know, which new players from South Pacific and Caramoan are game changers? Did you play with any players from your first season that you would classify as game changers?
Well, I'm still not clear what the definition of game changer is, so it's a difficult
Sophie
question
Sophie was almost
answer.
A game changer.
Well, Sophie is interesting in that, like when I was playing my second time, one of the producers said, like, oh, you're playing like a combination of Coach and Sophie's games. And I hadn't realized it at the time, but I think it's probably true. Sophie was great at like, let's keep the status quo. And she was able to control the kind of more unwieldy players. It wasn't a super flashy game. So from that perspective, it's hard to say it's game changing. I mean, I think that like coaches, I know, oh, he said new players. I was going to say Coach changed his game substantially and kind of manipulated religion right. in a way that was never seen before. But of new players, I guess Brandon probably changed, I mean, not in necessarily the most fun way, but
yeah.
Brandon had such a different set of things that were guiding his decision-making mm-hmm. that is a game changer. In terms of Caramoan, I don't know if there's a game changer. I will say like Reynolds, I think if he ever wanted to come back, he would be like one of the best players ever.
You know, I interviewed
ever.
Him recently.
I know, and I was excited about that.
Did you listen to that?
I did not listen.
Okay. Yeah.
Well, I don't listen to podcasts. I don't know. I'm just sitting in bed and eat candy. like, it's like the movie Big. Like, I'm basically doing what the guy in Big does.
Right.
The kid in Big. But Reynolds like is super charismatic and smart and very self-aware. Like he was sometimes kind of say douchey stuff, but he knew he was coming across that way and was able to kind of twist into something funny. Mm-hmm. And he's like the most shockingly handsome person in the world.
Right.
Like crazily, I think maybe the most attractive guy to ever play Survivor.
Whoa.
Just his eyes. He looks like a Disney prince or a Disney villain or something. Just like it's crazy. And so super charming and smart. So I think I would love to see him come back. I know he has a family now and maybe it's less of a
He wants to come back.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, cool. He did start Snapchatting me after years of not really communicating. So maybe he's getting nostalgic for it.
Yeah. No, he was very high on you during the,
really?
The podcast. And he said that that it was a thrill for him that on day 39 that he said he had a moment with you where that you had come back and you were like, I guess I don't know if you were like bunkmates or whatever and had said to him like, did I just win Survivor? and he was like really touched by that moment.
I said that to everyone just so they would tell me yes. Yeah.
going back to the candy, what is your favorite candy to be eating in bed?
Oh, boy. I mean, bed is a completely different game. I've recently gotten into Sour Patch Kids. It's like kind of mixing it up. The peril with that is that it makes your mouth really raw if you eat too many of them.
The sugar.
Yeah, so you have to kind of, moderation is key. Reese's Cups are like a constant for me.
Do you have them chilled?
No, I sometimes do that, but not often. In terms of chilled things, there are Sour Patch Kid popsicles that I can't recommend highly enough.
Yes.
And they come with a fun joke, some of it stick. I wish they'd bring back Jell-O Pudding Pops.
Yes.
They don't, like, they've not been sold for like 5 years. They have freaking...
I think that the Cosby thing just took them all down.
Really? Was that? I think the death of them was predated that, but maybe they knew beforehand. They're like, uh-oh, we don't want to be affiliated with this anymore.
right. This is food and...
Yeah. So interesting. I don't need to keep saying okay. Candy stuff.
Did your parents not let you have a lot of candy when you were a kid, and now as an adult you need to sort of like satisfy this need?
It's the exact opposite.
I think you constantly have had candy.
Well, my mom used to put. I'm addicted to Coca-Cola.
Right.
It's like to a. I have a painting of Coke and stuff. I'm crazy about it. And like, my mom used to put Coca-Cola in my baby bottles as like a 1 year old.
Yeah.
And like I laid and like my teeth all like disintegrated, like all my baby teeth like just disintegrated, these little nubs that like I didn't even have to lose them because they all just like vanished.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you, as somebody who is the parent of a baby who's teething, this is a good idea.
To give them Coca-Cola?
Yes. Well, yes, because then if the teeth go away, okay, right, yeah. Then I can sleep.
Maybe I should write a caretaking book. But like, so I asked my mom, like, why do you give me Coke? Because now I'm hooked on it. And she said, because that's all you would drink. But like, I had to have been introduced to it at some point. Mm-hmm. Like, I was not born with like an innate desire to drink a bunch of soda. And then beyond that, we had a candy drawer that was just like, we could open it whatever we wanted. And I think the idea is like learning self-moderation, but it went the opposite direction. We're like, oh no, that's my entire diet now is candy. So my parents were very permissive, and probably it resulted in me being as messed up as I am now in terms of my diet.
Okay. So if you had a kid, would you let them eat all the candy they wanted? Because it's like, hey.
I think so. Well, I don't know. I would also consult my wife or whatever. I don't know. But like my instinct is I feel like, I guess you get a sense of what sort of impulse control your kid has pretty quickly. But like if they seem like a responsible kid, no, give them the freedom to make that sort of choice. I think that's valuable. You have to give kids the freedom to explore and you know, if they eat too much
leash.
Yeah, well, it's like the kid that smokes a cigarette and you make him smoke the whole pack, and then it's like, okay, he doesn't want to smoke anymore.
Okay, this is an interesting question. Amy Howard wants to know, how did Sia feel about the goat scene?
I actually didn't. I just watched last night's episode with her.
Okay, so could you just wind this back to how did you end up befriending Sia?
Yeah, well, it's all Twitter. I mean, again, yes. If I hadn't name dropped my Twitter handle, none of this would have happened. I guess I mentioned my Twitter handle. I got so many tweets that day that I couldn't follow everything. But a friend of mine, and this was before Chandelier. She's obviously had a very long career before that, but I was not super familiar with it. But a friend of mine was like, oh my God, this big pop star tweeted you.
Mm-hmm.
And the tweet was like, oh, I think you're great, Cochran or something.
Right.
And then she had followed me. So I followed her back. She reached out to me. I know this is a boring story. And she said, oh, if you're ever in LA, let's get together. And then we hit it up. She was like one of my first friends. It's crazy. My social circle out here is like Sia Probst and like Kit Kat bars.
Right. Right. So is that the thing? Does somebody have to be like a big enough figure to get you out of the house?
No. And that's the thing. Sia Probst and Sia will tell you, I ignore their texts. I go weeks without responding to them. But like the thing is, to be a friend of mine, and like Malcolm's aware of this now, the people that you go through a tough period with me where I don't respond, and you just learn that's like, I'm not excusing myself. I'm aware this is horrible behavior of mine that's very rude and dismissive and self-centered.
I get it. So this is sort of like a screening process.
But it's not
for
intentional.
You, it's like that, you know, Seth Godin writes about like there's like a dip where it's like when you first start being friends, hey, I know Cochran, this is fun. But then there's it's terrible because then you're like constantly like messaging and then people give up. They say, I don't need this abuse. Forget this. And then the people that survive that, those are the people.
And I'm very close with those people. That's the thing. Like, I don't have many survivor acquaintance friends. I have like a small handful that I'm like, Steve and I are very, very close. I'm very close with Andrew. I'm very close with Malcolm. I'm very close with Dawn and Sophie. But beyond that, I don't really have that many. And like Edna and stuff. I don't know. I feel like a lot of, because I was seeing tweets about my appearance on the show from former survivors, and they were like all very critical and like very personally, very mean
of this appearance.
This one. I mean, they've consistently been not liking me, but like just
I didn't see anything.
Oh, I saw several things. They were texted to me, and I was like, you know, I keep track of that thing and internalize it.
Yeah, all right, put it in your book.
But I think part of that is probably, and it's completely fair on their end, that like there was probably a point where I stopped replying to texts, and it makes me seem like a complete a-hole that does not care about them, and like, I just have so little social. And again, I'm not excusing myself, and I don't know. I'm sorry to talk in circles about this, but like I get socially exhausted very, very quickly. So I just need a small little group. And it's not about fancy people. I'm friends with writers and my high school friends are still my closest friends. I went to, you know, one of their weddings a couple weeks ago. I don't know.
That's nice.
Yeah.
I don't have any high school friends.
You don't have any friends. So, I mean, it's like, yeah.
No, I really don't. I have a couple of friends that I keep in contact with from college. And that's
I have like no college friends.
Yeah. Okay. So we're the opposite. Okay, so anyway, so see, you met Sia then, and then you've just like hit it off in terms of like watching you watch the shows with her.
Well, that's a more recent thing. We used to just like hang out. She introduced because mm-hmm. I didn't have any friends when I moved out here. Like I didn't know anybody except for Probst, Sia, and a couple other people like Malcolm. And she was nice enough to introduce me to her social circle and met people through that, and they've all been wonderful. And yeah, so we watched the show. We did a viewing party for the episode that I made my little appearance on and had some friends there, and that was fun. Everyone kind of celebrated because I'm very bad at celebrating stuff.
But so, she didn't mention anything about that they were almost going to kill the goat.
No, I think she was more because Probst was
because that would have been awkward for you because Sia might have said, Cochran, I need you to pick me or Malcolm as your two friends. Right.
Well, she did. Well, the show made it seem because I know the aftermath was like they did eat a goat, right? Like it came out that they did.
I think the truth was they actually did eat a
right,
goat.
Right. That's what I'm saying. Yeah. So the show made it seem like there was kind of a sweet deliberation.
And they talked.
And then it was like, oh, no, we can't eat Bambi. And then it was fine. So I think she was fine with it. She had turned Probst on to like care for the chickens. Because I guess originally when jumping off the boats, they would kind of drown or get trapped in bad ways.
Yeah. Did she talk through with you going and giving Ty money at the finale?
Yeah. So she had the previous finale. I'd gone with her.
Yeah.
And she wanted to do it for Keith.
Yes.
And she came up to me in Probst afterwards and said, like, I was going to storm the stage and give $100,000 to Keith because I thought he was so great and wished he had won. And Probst did say, like, oh, well, if you ever want to do that again, you got to do it. Just don't tell me because I want it to be a surprise. So, like, when she did it, it was a surprise.
Yes.
But it was not a completely foreign concept to him that something like that could happen.
Because I think that there was like terror for people watching the show in terms of
this lunatic running. Yeah.
Yeah. Somebody has come up on the stage and nobody exactly knew quite what was going on.
Did you like that? How do you feel about these sorts of things? Like, do you like all these twists and wacky things or
at the reunion?
Or just in general? I mean, at the reunion, sure.
See,
what's your ideal reunion? What do you want a reunion to look like?
See, I think that the ideal reunion, just the concept of the reunion, is that there needs to be something that happens that 10 years later, you can still remember when this thing happened at the reunion. So I think that a wacky event that you're not expecting, I think can make a reunion show. Like the Survivor Ko-Rong finale is probably only remembered for Sia coming on the stage and giving money to Ty. I dare you to think of something else that happened in that reunion show.
They mentioned Aubrey and they mentioned me in the crab. That was my only. I agree with you.
Some of those are the things that I think that become transcendent on these reunion shows. So I feel like that while certain people like complain, and I know that it was certainly going back to Karen Moen, they didn't let people sit on the stage and they don't ask everybody.
Yeah, do you think everybody should be asked a question?
I probably not.
Yeah.
And I know that there are some survivors that would say that's sacrilege. I'll be kicked out of the Survivor Facebook group for saying this, Cochran.
Have you talked about the Survivor Facebook group on here?
I don't tell tales out of school. Okay, I've mentioned that there is one that exists. Okay. Yes. Are you in it? Did you get the invite?
Sophie added me to it.
Okay.
I look at it occasionally.
You haven't posted yet. You're waiting for the right thing to post about.
Right. Well, there's not even that much activity in it generally. You're not missing. No. I will say for people that are listening and
it
think there's some
more
great, there's like
is.
Nothing. Yeah. Like somebody will say like, that was a great episode, guys. And then it gets 10 likes and somebody says,
right.
You
know. Right.
So sorry. So you don't think, I agree with you. I don't think everybody needs to be asked a question. Cause my memory is, well, I don't know. It is sad from the perspective of like you get dressed up and this is your last moment on the show and you want to be acknowledged for your thing. But like my memory is, as a kid growing up and watching the early seasons, I remember being like, I don't remember or care about this person. And it's cold.
I've been on a reunion show and I have not gotten a question.
Oh, really?
I feel like that.
He didn't talk to everybody on the All-Stars?
Yeah, I mean, there was too much. Again, there was too much wacky stuff going on.
Marriage.
I mean, Rob was proposing to Amber and then there was stuff going on. Jerry Manthe walked off. That's probably the craziest reunion show of any of them.
That's amazing.
And I say, okay. I mean, what was he going to ask me? And if the question I was going to get was probably going to be like something like, boy, Rob, you really did a good job last time, but why did you do so bad this time? Like, yeah. It was really right. Just going to be probably shining a light on, you know, I do believe that Jeff does the best that he can on these reunion shows. I know people get disappointed, but, you know, there's probably, you know, really, you know, bad examples of people that should have gotten questions that didn't. But I don't know if necessarily every single person in every season. I bet in, you know, the reunion show for this season, I bet most of the people are going to get I tend to do a draft the week before the finale of who won't get a question, which is a fun game to play. But I think that almost everybody will get one.
So, and some of these early boots are the people that probably a lot of people want to hear from. So there will be
Right. This season is going to be that not to tip off my draft too much, but yeah. I feel like there's maybe only one or two people that I think are in serious danger of not getting a question.
I liked what Jeff did last reunion. I actually thought was really good, where he like turned it more into like a topic based conversation instead of just like going, Chris, blah, 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 and then move on to someone else. He kind of would be like, let's talk about defying the millennials versus Gen X generation labels. And then like, would kind of talk to a few people about that. Felt more fluid and conversational to me. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. But when was the last time somebody like said that was a great reunion show? People always complain about it.
People always complain about their reunion show. People always complain about everything. It's part like Big Brother is the same thing. Every season of Big Brother, people say this season sucked. Yeah. People come back, and that's just part of how it is.
Where would you preliminarily rank this season so far?
I would say that it's certainly not one of my favorite seasons, but I don't think that this is a bottom 10 season. I feel like it's sort of like middle ground.
Could it go up dramatically depending on how the rest of the season
is? Sure, sure. I think that you could have a crazy final nine, and it could go down, but it really could go either way. Would you have a number in your head? Do you do a season ranking?
No, I mean, I generally think things more kind of like you do, of like I have a rough top five-ish and some bottom ones. I think that this is probably a top 14 season
top
for
14
me.
Season. Wow.
I legitimately like, I can't say enough about, I love that pre-merge a lot. And then I also kind of feel like from a story perspective, it's kind of like, it's the death of your old idols. And now we're creating this new generation of, you know, otherwise you don't want Survivor to turn into the challenge where it's just like people coming back for the 100th season. And it's just like reliving heroes versus villains again. Admittedly, I like those players a ton and I wish that they were still in there, but there is something nice about
Who are we minting as the new faces of Survivor?
Of the remaining players?
Yeah.
Well, I think Brad is like a big personality. Mm-hmm. I think Sarah is emerging as, you know, again, she's not doing big, kind of funny, crazy things, but I don't know. I think I like her. She's a personality we haven't seen on the show before, like the kind of like very intense, straight laced, dry sense of humor that sometimes comes out, and the kind of clinical approach to the game that I like. Maybe it's kind of Sophie-ish. I don't know. I mean, her maneuvers are very different from Sophie, but just kind of the like very slightly detached, clinical approach to it. Who else? I don't know whether Sierra is, I actually think she's doing way better this season, personality wise.
Sure.
Like, from a branding standpoint.
More airtime
than. And not even just airtime, it could be boring airtime, but it's not boring. I like the stuff of her in the hammock I found, like, I don't know, I'm sure you talked about it, but like being in a hammock and like kind of giving edicts and, you know, telling people what to do, I found to be like ominous for her winning chances. But I liked it. As a kind of a character moment, the new sheriff in town, she's kind of, I don't know, she's kind of consciously cultivating a slightly villainous, like kissing Malcolm. That's a comic book villain maneuver. That's like literally a kiss of death.
Mm-hmm.
How would you react if somebody kissed you right before you, like you, they voted you off, they kiss you on the cheek and you have to leave. Would your memory be like, that was mean or rude or weird?
It depends
or,
who it was. I think it would depend on what my relationship was with them prior to that. Like, if Boston Rob kissed me on the cheek on Survivor All Stars, I'd be like, well, that's kind of a jerk move to do.
Do you hope that Boston...
If Jenna Maraska kissed me on the cheek before I got voted off in, it would be a different context.
Right, yeah.
And I'm not saying it like because that's a girl.
Right.
I'm saying it because it might be like that, you know, hey, I did this because that, you know, you'll win. You know, that's why I have to vote you out. So I think it really just depends on the context.
Who do you think? Has anybody else jumped out or emerged as a... I think Ty's basically kind of stayed roughly the same. But I don't know. I just feel like it... I like new blood. And I like, and I actually think it's also giving people like Andrea, who, even though this is her third time playing, this is her most, for me, like legendary appearance. Mm-hmm. Again, I don't know.
It started slow.
No, it started very, very slow, which I actually took as a good sign, because like you can get a lot of airtime pretty easily if you're a panicky, over-strategizing nut, mm-hmm. which I think the over-strategizing was her downfall before. So the fact that she corrected for that, I think, is very, very good. I like the new blood. I mean, as much as I'd like to see Sandra running around, I'm glad that it's new faces, and I like that it's kind of been a shifting alliance situation. I'm happy with it.
Okay. Megan Z wants to know, who would be the ideal cast of Survivors to fill your family for Family Feud?
Oh, that's interesting. What does that mean exactly?
Okay,
does that
so
mean
like, I think that this is the, okay, so you're going on Family Feud,
yeah.
the Cochran family, and you get to bring four other people with you.
So people that I want to do well are people that would most fit into kind of like a familial
no,
bond.
No, I don't think it's necessarily like who would be your dad, who would be your okay. mom. I think that you could take four people with you on your dream team of Family Feud.
Sophie would be good.
Yeah.
She likes Family Feud as I do. Mm-hmm. Malcolm, I'm going to name the people I'm like friendly with probably, but I'm trying to think of beyond that. I think Suri would be good.
Yeah.
I think she has a good, the fact that she can get along with different people, I think means that she has a good handle on what 100 people surveyed at mm-hmm. random.
She
in a
might
mall.
Know what the average, the commoner yeah. Thinks.
How many people are on Family Feud? Five?
Five. But you're asking me. This is your
no,
show.
No, I know, but numbers aren't good with me. Or I'm not good with numbers. Let's see. I'm trying to think if Steven would be good.
No,
I do not
he's
think
too
so.
Out of touch. Yeah, no, he's too out of touch.
Yeah.
That he's not, you know, really.
And his answer to everything
people.
Would be like JT sucks. let's see what else. Who would I want? I think you actually want like a diverse group in terms of like ages and stuff too. Cause sometimes they ask, so maybe I think actually Brad Culpepper would be good to have.
Yeah. Why?
Well, that's just a completely different perspective from what I have. There are certain questions that they ask that are like right. not something that they're like, name a famous football player who
right.
would be.
You don't want to go too sort of like one direction.
Right. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So yeah, maybe that's, I think that's five people that I named.
Yeah.
Okay. Who do you have? Is it weird that I'm answering this and you're not? Come on.
Oh, on my Family Feud team, boy.
Or who do you, you don't have to answer that. Who would you want to most align? Who's your dream alliance on Survivor? Or is that a bad question because it's revealing your biases?
No, no, I don't think that's necessarily revealing my biases.
Just from like a fantasy standpoint.
Yeah, I mean, I think I'd want somebody who, like, I feel like that, like, a Malcolm and Denise type thing is, like, really ideal. I would, I feel like Denise would be somebody really great. I would want somebody who was sort of, like, the opposite of me in a lot of ways, where we could really just, like, talk about and hash things out and, you know, do the sort of strategy talk, which I like to do.
Right.
And somebody who could also sort of, like, the, you know, when I tried to form a bond with Dina, in the Amazon. I felt like that this was my idea that I wanted to sort of like do this. I was very impressed with Jason and Danielle in Big Brother 3,
oh,
which I had just watched. And then I was trying to sort of recreate that. But then she ended up having like a lot of her own ideas and wanted to sort of like, go, like I couldn't keep her reeled in. She wanted to like make a big power play at a certain point.
Yeah. Like, how do you know it's going to be? So who would be, or just, you mean somebody like Denise or?
I mean, I think that maybe Denise might be the archetype to go through.
That's cool.
You know, but it would be very tough to find somebody that I could beat at the end that would be in that role. Like, I feel like that.
Right. I guess I'm thinking less from the winning perspective, more as kind of like the somebody that would be fun to work with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What about you? Do you have somebody like that? You said Suri.
Well, Suri is, from a fantasy standpoint, just like that would be so amazing. Although I don't know whether like.
Yeah, I think I would get on Suri's nerves, though. I feel like
really?
It wouldn't be a good
I think
roots.
I'd get along with Suri. I've also just
like
kind
of. I need somebody with a lot of patience.
Yeah. Right. Why? Because you're. Are you annoying to be around?
Of course, again, but I'm just constantly fed this, like, you're so irritating, you're
really?
So annoying.
They just say that? They're not even, like, masking it in other kind of euphemistic things?
No euphemism.
Wow.
Yeah.
I don't think you're annoying.
Well, but you're not here that much.
That's true. Yeah. Okay. You could be a monster when I'm gone.
I don't think so. But
Also, Malcolm, actually, think if I could trust, that was a slight regret of mine that, like, Malcolm and I were theoretically on the same side for a little bit, but never on the same page. I think that would be a funny pairing that is a dynamic that's never been kind of seen before.
Okay. Let's see. This is a question from Steve Chung wants to know, please explain the style of dance you're proficient in and how this came about.
Where did that come from?
I've talked about how that you are a
You saw me dance,
yes,
right?
Yes.
Oh, God, I forgot all about that. That was ridiculous at that, whatever that Tyson thing was.
Yeah. The debut of
I like danced around shockingly confidently, right?
That yeah. Was, I was like, wow, I'm really impressed. And you said, yeah, I do dancing in my apartment myself.
Yeah. I'd say I'm probably most skilled at like kind of popping and locking.
Yes,
sort
there's
of
a
stuff.
YouTube video also. That
yeah, but
was
that video's not good because you're only seeing the upper half of me.
Yeah.
Like, and it just like looks like I'm kind of spasming left and right. I'm pretty good at that. I'm not good at like practical dancing, like the sort of thing that would be cool at a club. For a first dance and a wedding, like, were you nervous? Did you have to practice? Were you like,
I was nervous, but I figured like, it's like only like 40 seconds of embarrassment.
But did you spin her around at a certain point?
No, I just sort of like did like the like prom the
dance.
Sway. Yeah. Yeah.
That's lovely. Yeah, no, I have no idea how to dance like that.
Mm-hmm.
But just kind of, yeah, kind of Michael Jackson-ish stuff.
Yeah.
I dance around a lot of those.
I'm very impressed.
Really?
You do a very good job.
Thank you. Oh my God.
Yeah.
It's always a thrill to hear it because like, I always assume I look like a gremlin weirdo wherever I am. So to get third person I don't know if you're objective.
No, again, like, I'm not necessarily like one of the judges on So You Think You Can Dance, yeah. But compared to what I can do, I mean, light years ahead yeah. Of anything that I'm doing on the dance floor.
Thank you.
Where it would be like just sort of like snapping my fingers and then somebody would like, be like laughing at me.
I never know what to do with my hands. Mm-hmm. Like, what do you do with your hands when dancing?
Don't ask me.
Yeah. You snap, apparently, you said.
Yeah. Yeah. Doing like the Carlton, basically. Yeah. Okay. This is a question that is from Ryan VD Brink. As a lifelong awkward hugger myself, any advice in overcoming this problem?
Was I the awkward hugger in that too, or was I just the recipient of an awkward hug?
Very interesting.
I mean, I will say like, it's a weird experience to be hugged by someone who's crying, who you've never met before.
Yeah.
That's like, that's a naturally awkward, very awkward experience. I do not have advice because I'm terrible. I'm terrible at consolation. I'm terrible at most social interactions in terms of like, I can't extract myself from uncomfortable situations very well, so I just kind of stay in it indefinitely. That's another reason why why I'm like, I don't want to get in a position where I'm stuck doing stuff because I cannot say no or get myself out of things.
Interesting.
So I think she probably ended the hug. I would have just kept hanging on until the end of time.
Yeah.
But I also at the same time, like, it's a difficult emotional experience. I think her emotions at that point are, she's finally getting to talk to somebody who's not out there to screw her over. It's kind of like the family visit. Like, you're not that you're not missing your family that much. It's just kind of a reminder that people exist out there that aren't there to screw you over. I think that's what she was feeling. So I was happy to kind of provide, whether it was awkward or not, the physical proximity necessary to kind of soothe her. But I don't know. What are your tips?
To end an awkward hug? How the hell do I
guess,
know?
I guess you pat. Yeah. I guess pat is like the natural ending point. The weird thing is like I was sitting down at first.
I'm the giver of awkward hugs.
Yeah. Do you pat typically or not?
No, I think I'm just trying to figure out what to do. Like, I really, again, my problem is always I get the mixed signals of, am I giving a handshake or a hug? I'm fine with either. Yeah. I just never know what I'm supposed to be doing.
My danger is like high five greetings or whatever, like the cool handshake.
Yeah, forget
I have
that.
No
forget
freaking
that.
Idea
no,
how to do
no,
it.
No, forget
it's
it.
It's like a freaking, you're doing a Rubik's Cube just to do a handshake. Like,
yeah. That's tricky. It's very tricky. This is a question from Amy also wants to know, why are you the only Survivor player Jeff Probst follows you on follows on Twitter? Is this a lot of pressure for you to be the only person that that Jeff follows on Twitter? Because I think that it probably leads to a lot of animosity from the other players.
It might. Yeah, I don't know. Why it is? I think that he was very excited. Well, see, I don't feel it's no pressure in that. Like, I don't think he checks Twitter that often, to be honest.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes he'll go on there, but it's not as though he's like poring over what I'm tweeting. I think that it's probably because he was a big part in me moving out here and getting this job, and kind of, I think he rightly so took a little bit of ownership over my progress and just kind of was like a, I don't know. I think he felt a connection over that and just kind of, I don't think it's like I'm his favorite Survivor player ever and that's why he's following me. I think he prefers tons of people over me. But I think it was just kind of a weirdly personal connection we got over the writing stuff. If it's causing animosity, I hope it's not causing animosity, but maybe it is.
I would think, and again, I think that, you know, where you say that you see that there are survivors that will, like, you know, talk negatively about you. I think it comes from a place of resentment of, well, why not me? Why aren't I the one that Jeff has taken an interest in? What's wrong with me? Why him?
Yeah, maybe. That's probably true. I feel bad about the stuff that I only reply to text from. I can see now, listening back, I'm mentally playing back this entire interview. I'm like, oh my God, I was saying respond to text from C and all these fancy people, but screw the freaking comment. You know, like, that's not what my existence is like. The funny thing is, like, on Instagram, I post like a picture like every 3 months, and it's always me doing an uncharacteristically cool thing where like I'm with Probst or something, or I'm like getting off a helicopter. But the reason I'm only posting every 3 months is because the other 89 days of that period,
you're eating,
I'm doing nothing.
Yeah.
Like a superhumanly, my existence is unspeakably sad. I don't mean to say that.
Yeah.
So don't get it twisted that I'm like this like bon vivant socialite or something. I'm some nut that like watches old game shows alone in an apartment.
Yeah. Okay.
Is this going to do wonders for my dating life?
Well, I think it probably, if there's a woman who's listening to a 3-hour Survivor podcast, then probably it can only help, right?
Someone who's like in a coma, maybe, that just like, I can wheel them next to my bed and just
Right. They'll wake up from the coma just to make it stop.
Yeah.
Okay, Paul Board just wants to know, will you continue to Periscope the Family Feud, or does he need to follow you on Instagram or Facebook Live?
Oh, interesting.
So what do you do? Talk me through, how do you do a Periscope Family Feud?
I literally watch
it and then you just play along?
I just aim the camera at the TV screen, and it's kind of a fun group participation.
You critique the answers? Like,
yeah, we kind of do as a group.
Like, good answer.
No, it's more, actually, no. I do like a lot of the answers that they give. Because the thing about Family Feud...
Is it like Richard Dawson Family Feud? Is it Steve Harvey?
No, I prefer Richard Dawson. This is Steve Harvey. My problem with Steve Harvey is that it's like, he asks questions where the answer is clearly setting somebody up for a sexual innuendo.
And then
he acts as though it's like shocking that somebody had the audacity to say it. I don't like that aspect of it. No, I think I'll probably not Facebook Live. I've never done Facebook Live. I think I'll keep doing it with Periscope because fewer people follow me on that. Whereas Instagram, like I got some, it was a shocking thing where like people I know in real life started watching it, and I got very, very ashamed of myself that they're watching me watch Family Feud
on Instagram.
Yeah. Do you Instagram Live?
I've never done an Instagram Live. I've never done an Instagram story. I tend to do anything like on Snapchat because I feel like that it's no people that I know in real life really.
Right, that's
like,
a big thing.
Like my mom's on Instagram.
Yeah.
But like I feel like there's almost like no stakes in.
Does your mom listen to every podcast?
I think she'd probably listen to this one because she's a big fan of yours.
Oh, well, hello. Yes. What's your mom's name?
Roseanne.
Hello, Roseanne.
Mother's Day came early. Yes.
When is Mother's Day?
Next Sunday.
Oh, man, thank you for telling. Wait, next Sunday meaning?
The 14th.
Okay, so a week from like a few days from now. Okay.
Yes.
Oh,
yes.
Man.
Right around the corner.
What are you going to do for Mother's Day?
Probably send my mom a photo from canvaspeople.com.
Is that a sponsor?
Yeah, yes. or maybe flowers from Pro Flowers with promo code RealityTV.
Yeah.
Anything. Possibilities are endless.
And maybe like a Patreon something.
I'm not going to donate to my mom's Patreon. She can promote that on her own podcast. Okay.
I see the magic eight balls.
Yeah, you didn't see that last time?
Last time I did, but I didn't just see it.
I've moved it.
Yeah.
I moved everything.
What are those buffs all buffs that you played with? Or
some of them are, and some of them are just ones I had. I ended up filming my 500th moment in that corner, and I tried to decorate it up a little bit. Did you have a favorite 500th moment?
I did. I've since deleted the tweet. Out of shit, I don't know. I compulsively delete tweets. No, I had my favorite one. Well, I think I said the Palau final immunity challenge, and then I mentioned like a joking thing about Jeff wearing a cowboy hat in the islands or something.
Okay. Blue Bear said, last time you were on, I asked you how you would pitch a new sitcom to CBS called The Vlachos. CBS has now informed you they want a different direction and they want you to develop a sitcom based on the wacky hijinks at Brad's personal injury law firm with colorful characters like Debbie, Officer Sarah, and Tony, and others. What would your pitch to CBS look like for this new sitcom called Better Call Brad?
I mean, like, first off, they completely just did the pitch. Like, how am I even supposed to come up with it? They even gave a title. Like,
all right, how about this? Could you top Better Call Brad with a pitch from any of the remaining characters?
From the season?
Yes.
All right, let's see. Let's talk. I like it. Last time it was kind of a collaborative thing. I don't want it to just be me rambling about stuff.
I'm happy to be involved.
Let's see. Who's an interesting person? I mean, Ty, I feel like he is a character that is rife with the potential for comedic conflict and stuff.
Right. I don't know if we're building the show around Ty.
No. He's like a wacky neighbor, maybe. Who should be the
with the
center?
Bees? Right. Let's see. Of the remaining people, I mean, Troyzan is certainly a possibility.
You usually want, I will say, like, networks want a main character who is very kind of straight laced and not like wacky, not a huge flaws or anything. So I feel like Sarah actually would be like the straight man in the show, surrounded by all this mayhem. So it's kind of like Officer Sarah with all the nutty inmates kind of running the asylum.
And what does she do on an episode of Officer Sarah? Is it a procedural?
Well, first off, she enters the room, she goes woo woo, and then the crowd goes crazy because that's her catchphrase.
That's her catchphrase.
Yeah. I like that. I thought that was cute. That was a rare moment. Why does everyone call her Officer Sarah? Or I guess is it just Ceree?
Well, Ceree does it. And again, I don't know if this is officially canon. I said it was on the Know-It-Alls last night, but somebody had corrected me that does Ceree do it because that she knows that that's something important to her. And is that something that she's trying
to do? That's the pandering to the ego. Look, again, this is great. I think I'm right about this stuff. All right, let's see. So Officer Sarah, where is she working? Is she a cop or is it funny seeing her in a different context?
Let's see. Could she be undercover somewhere?
Okay, yeah. Undercover is good. So she's having to kind of entrench herself into kind of interesting social circles.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It's a tough group of people. There's like a controversy at like a barrel racing event. I can imagine who would be at the barrel racing event.
Right, right. It's, you know, we don't really have an over the top character.
Yeah, I know.
Like
there's
Tony.
Tough.
It's really,
That was almost too, lightning is not going to strike twice. I don't even really want to attempt to top it. Cause like with that, you had Tony, Cass is the evil neighbor. Morgan was the hot daughter coming down the stairs. Spencer's the kind of like, Charlie.
Yeah. And Wu was trying to date Morgan.
Yeah. That's like too perfect. So I don't even know how to, I feel like this might be like a drama, you know, this would be like a Breaking Bad sort of thing where like, it's a Breaking Bad where it's kind of like,
well, you have like a Law and Order type thing.
Yeah. But it's Sarah becoming a criminal. She's playing like a criminal this time. The straight laced cop is now actually becoming,
she's like a dirty cop.
Yeah. And that's her, like, that's her line of the season, right? That's her like story in a nutshell. I'm gonna play like a criminal this time.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, so I'm sure there's some pun on like a bad cop, crooked, just call it crooked.
Okay,
the Sarah Lacina story.
The crooked cop. Okay. Megan Z also wanted to know, she says, this is super off topic, but did you know you were going to be featured on the Today Show's Bumble segment?
I did not know that. I got all these tweets that morning. I was slightly mortified, not by the fact that people now were aware that I was on a dating app, because I don't really care about that. I was mortified by, like, because they swiped through several of my pictures and like I'm holding a prop that's clearly intended to divert attention away from me in every picture. So it's like one's me holding this famous Instagram dog, one's me holding my baby nephew, one's me holding a guitar, one's me holding my baby nephew who's holding a guitar. So it's just kind of showing what my pandering technique is on the dating apps. Although somebody had sent me a tweet that was like, hey, are you aware you're the face of Bumble, with a screenshot of my thing on there? So I took a screenshot of that tweet, and now that's one of my pictures on Bumble, or it was before I deleted it.
Okay.
So I did not know. I guess I don't have to get your, I'm guessing you sign away, or that's a cautionary tale too. I guess you sign away your rights to your image when you sign up for one of those apps, because you'd think that they would have to ask you for that, but they didn't.
Okay. Well, David Baltazar wants to know, how do you feel about Gerben using your picture while giving IT customer support in Holland? If I was in Holland, I would totally trust that face for technical help.
I do like it. I mean, it's like, it's funny because I feel like there have been other survivors whose images have been used for like, there are hot singles in your area kind of thing. You know, there's like pop-up ads for like dating things, whereas mine is like, yeah, I am just like good with computers, I guess, and like provide good customer service. I didn't mind. I like that it means that I'm like a prototypically kind of, I'm aware I look like a nerd and I'm like a clip art nerd kind of guy. So I didn't mind. I got a kick out of it. I'm just surprised that like, how did they find me? What did they search to get that image? I don't think it was a Survivor fan because it's some weird, I forget what country it was. It's like Switzerland or something, or Sweden. Yeah.
They probably like Googled like guy with glasses or something
but
like that.
But am I really one of the first results for a guy with glasses?
I don't know. We should Google it and see see what comes up.
Yeah, I feel like there must be others before me.
So what's going on writing-wise? You want to talk about what you're up to?
Yeah, I mean, I'm up to, so I was working on Kevin Can Wait.
Yes.
I just moved back to California to develop a pilot with my mentor guy, Greg, who's the person who gave me my first job and who's got, who forced me
Buis?
To do Greg Buis. Yeah. He emerged from hiding just to console me.
Was your mentor. I didn't even know.
We're doing a flying fish show together. It's Greg Garcia who did like Raising Hope and my name is Ron. So I'm working with him. The likelihood of like, developing a pilot sounds fancy. It really doesn't mean it. The likelihood of it actually getting picked up or getting on air.
Right.
Because I sold a pilot like a couple of years ago.
Yes.
It sounds very impressive, but like it doesn't. The network buys a bunch of shows and they actually only shoot like 5 of the or 10 of them. And then.
So they bought a treatment or a script?
A script.
Yeah. And then. But that never went to.
No. It actually apparently like less. I got. Call saying like Les Moonves is reading this on his plane right now. So like it was crazy to think that like this big shot's reading it. I guess he did not like it. It's like the sad ending of that story. So I'm working on that. The main thing is that mid-May is like when new shows get picked up and that's when the staffing cycle starts. So I'm hoping to land. I much prefer being staffed on a show because it's like you are with other funny people and I don't know. It forces me to socialize because as I've discussed at obscene length, when I don't have that need, I like will just kind of hold myself up.
Do you like being in LA better than New York?
Yeah, I'd kind of mythologize.
Do you feel like this is your home?
No place feels like my home, but this is the closest I feel to a home. Like New York, I like New York, but my hours were, I was getting home at like 3 a.m. every night. We were working weekends and also I just wasn't able, I didn't have that many friends there. I had Steven and Sophie, but our schedules are very, very different. So I'm happy to be back here. I've carved a nice little social circle here and I'm happy to be back.
Okay. Well, I was very happy to have you back here.
Oh, you're done? That's where we're ending on? No, that's not the most boring answer. No.
What do you want to end on?
There are no more questions?
I've got other questions, but that they're not necessarily good or things that we've
covered.
How
bad? Wait, no, what? So last time we did a podcast, did you immediately feel like that was a good one?
Yeah.
What about this one?
I feel like that this is a good one.
Man. Okay.
You know, that you want to come on out and play an encore?
No. What's just one more question. That was a boring question.
Okay. Let me see. Do you want me to find...
Or if you can come up with something.
Well, what do you want? You want something ridiculous? You want something about Survivor?
Whatever you want. What do you want to talk about?
Okay. Brett Walker wants to know, what happens at the final 6 if all the players are immune? One by legacy, one by immunity win.
Boring, okay. Boring. Right, other see? Question.
Here, you take, take the paper. Oh, you okay?
Let's see. Okay. This is harder than I thought. Any cool stories from behind the scenes?
Do you want to check Twitter? Maybe somebody tweeted a question.
Okay. Are you checking it? Okay, this is dead air.
I'm going to check Twitter. We can clean this up. I mean, I think the people are along for the ride at this point.
Possible Chloe and Andrea. Oh, not Chloe. Sorry.
Yeah.
Possible Sri and Andrea misdirect. These are such specific questions. Like, how am I going to know any of this?
Well, that's
the other thing I'm also insecure about. Because like, I have no insight into anything. You know, like I'm just some guy. You've already dissected it with Steven and the Twitter universe has already picked apart the episode at such great length. Did you find a compelling question?
Not yet.
Oh man, this is, I thought I was ending I thought before that was a bad place to end, but now we're going to end after just like a series of silence and the realization there are no good questions. No, these are all good questions. What would the conversation with Ozzy have been like?
Yeah. If you had been on the boat with Ozzy, how would that have gone?
I actually think it would have gone. Oh, this is this is not going to be a funny answer either, but I think it would have gone fine. I think people are expecting, I don't actually have any bad blood with Ozzy. We got along pretty decently. I said, ask me anything. I'll see if I can do it now. I have gum in my mouth, so maybe it'll be difficult. But like when I went to Redemption Island, we bonded quite a bit. Not quite a bit. We bonded okay. And he taught me how to do that thing. Do you remember in Ferris Bueller when Cameron is flicking the side of his mouth and does that little water
like
drop sound?
Raindrop? Yeah.
Right, here we go.
Wow. Ozzy taught you that?
Yeah.
Wow. At what point did he do that?
He actually might have done it earlier. I think I might be misremembering the time frame, but it was just, I don't know why he did it. It was kind of like a weird little playful moment for him because he doesn't often do things like that. We talked about video games too.
Yeah. Ozzy plays a lot of video games?
He used to. I used to too. I'm not a big. I know. I just play like Mario Kart and stuff.
Yeah.
And I got that little. Retro.
Yeah, the old one.
I got the retro NES thing off of eBay, which I don't know. The cord length is like a freaking foot long. It's obscene. No, I played the most recent Mario Kart. Get Mario Kart. Get Dom Mario Kart. Can I play Mario Kart with Dom?
Sure. Nicole has been anti-video game system for them.
But it's responsible for a great, well-adjusted person like me developing. So don't you want Dom to be just like me?
Yeah, look, that would be an acceptable outcome.
Okay.
There's a lot of other survivors he could grow up like. It would be a lot worse.
Yeah. Did you ever play video games?
Yeah, I used to play a lot of Nintendo.
Like the original Nintendo?
Yeah.
What was your go-to game?
Let's see. I mean, I just a lot of like Super Mario, Mario 3 in particular. Really, yeah, that's...
Bubble Bobble. Did you play that ever?
No.
Oh, it's so good. Let's play Bubble Bobble. Let's get together and play Bubble Bobble.
Bubble Bobble?
Yeah.
Okay, sure.
It's my favorite game.
Why not?
Is it bad that we're ending on this note? Do people end with a bang? I guess I'm just trained to like, you have to end with a big, funny...
I think more end with a whimper. I think that's not like, you know, it's not like a stand-up show where you go out on a high note. It's good night, everybody.
But you want to reward people for their patience.
Yes. What's the hashtag today?
Ooh.
Do you have anything in mind? I wrote a couple things down.
What are the contenders?
Okay. Oh, well, I think you have my notes. So,
sorry.
Let me see. In terms of, what did I scribble on the paper? Bellini.
Oh, yeah.
Hashtag JT sucks. Steven's catchphrase.
I think that. No, let's go with that. Let's go with that. I'm going to get such angry texts from Steven.
Yes. Steven does not suffer fools.
You ever want to align with him? I'd love to see you play with him.
Do you ever get him really mad at you?
Oh, yeah. We get into fights all the time. Yeah, no. You see, we're both, we get angry at each other all the time.
We're going to Toronto, Steven and I.
Are you going to are you flying together?
We're not flying together because we're coming from opposite places, yeah. But
are you sharing a hotel room?
We are not sharing a hotel room, but we might have adjoining rooms. Who knows?
Oh my God.
We might have rooms next to each other.
What if you share the bathroom?
No, I don't think so. Okay. We're paying for separate rooms. Like,
I'm very fixated on this image of you sharing a hotel room.
I mean, I told Steven, like, when I pitched to him, like, hey, do you want to go to Toronto? And, like, I'll pay for the hotel room and everything. And, like, you'll have your own room. Like, I think it would have been a deal breaker.
Would you want to align with him? You didn't mention him in your fantasy alliance.
I feel like that Steven would vote me out. I really feel like, I feel pretty confident. But if I was ever on a season with Steven, I feel like it would be very important to him to do better than me on the season, and he would vote me out, and potentially like before the merge.
I would just love to see you two play to see the veneer of mutual respect you have for each other completely crumble, and just the unbridled hatred that you actually feel for each other to come to the fore.
Yeah, and I love Steven, but I feel like I like Steven more than he likes me. Also,
I will say he's always raved about you.
Yeah.
And he loves doing he's doing the note.
I mean, we have a great time, but I do feel like in a survivor situation, I feel like it would be like Steven would be very upset if I did better than him.
I love that. I'm glad we're ending on hashtag JT sucks. That's the perfect ending for this. I'm overjoyed.
Do you feel like that if you were on a season with Steven, you feel like that you would do well with him?
I think that we would stick together. I think in part because we open up to each, like when I, with my friendships, I'm very, very open and vulnerable.
Nervous, playing with Spencer last time that he might be like,
no, with me, I think we have enough dirt on each other that it's mutually assured destruction. So it's like, I don't want to screw him over because then he'll review. So I think we have a nice little delicate balancing act that we're doing.
Okay. Well, this has been so much fun because you have a book report due this summer.
Why did I agree to that?
We'll get you working on. The time has flown by for me. I don't know about for you.
I loved it. I loved every second of it.
Yes. And so, of course, you could follow. You want to plug your Twitter here?
Sure. Follow me at John M. Cochran. Actually, I have like no followers on Instagram.
How many followers do you have on Instagram? Let me guess. I have like 15,000?
Around there, like 10 or 15,000, yeah. Mm-hmm. Whereas like I look at Joe and he has like 200,000. Wow. No, but it is weird in that like... Twitter.
Platform, I think, has taken off more since you played.
I guess Twitter was the thing for my day, and then it changed.
Right.
Although none of us compared to like Big Brother and stuff, and like Bachelor. Although somebody, like, I reached like some like teeth whitening company reached out to me and was like, will you do one of those things? Oh, I'm not going to do that.
For what? On Twitter or on Instagram? Yeah.
Like nobody wants me to
use it and then talk about it.
Yeah. And I see those stupid posts where it's always like FabFitFun or whatever. I don't know. Maybe they're a sponsor. And I don't want to badmouth the product, but like
they're not one of our sponsors.
But it's always like so trans, like we don't believe that you've used this product and that it's actually caused any sort of positive transformation. You were paid a couple hundred dollars to post a picture of you smiling, holding a box.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
I get it.
JT sucks.
Do you think JT sucks?
No, I no. love, no, no,
Have
no,
you
no,
met
no,
JT?
No, I haven't. No, no, and he, and the bad thing is like Steven actually said that JT liked me. Like, so like, oh, now I feel bad.
Yeah.
But no, I love him as a character. I'm just saying this strictly to rile up Steven because I know that.
Did Sandra send you out here to do a hit piece on JT?
Oh, yeah, Sandra loved me more than ever. Oh, I'll send her the link to this.
It's like, yeah, I told you JT sucks.
He doesn't suck. He just is a, he's a very adventurous, daring player and you know.
Too daring.
Yeah, and he values from the presence of somebody that can rein in some of his more kind of impetuous impulses.
Okay. Well, John M. Cochran, you've done it again.
Really? Oh, thank you.
Yes.
This has been a thrill.
Great job. Lots of fun for me to go through all this. We got a lot more coming up. I am going to be in my next podcast talking with Akiva Winokur, a very funny guy that him and I have been doing a Seinfeld rewatch.
Ooh, awesome.
Since 2014.
What are you up to?
We just started season 9, episode 3. We're going to be up to
what season 9? What's
the final season?
Oh, that's wow. It. Okay.
We're up to the final season. The end of our 3-year journey. We've done something very interesting here with the podcast. We've cut off new listeners in the final season. So the final season is just for people who've been listening the whole way.
Ooh,
we're not allowing anybody new to listen to the podcast.
That's rewarding people's patience. That's what I was
That's
talking
right.
about. There we go.
So we close the books for the final season. It's just the people that were listening before season 8.
Awesome. That's exciting. I'll have to listen to that. That's exciting.
Well, were you listening the first
time? Oh, wait, I'm not allowed to. Oh, God. No, never mind.
You're
I'll
out.
I'll have to get a bootleg.
You're out. You're not on the list. So sorry. Sorry. You'll have to binge them sometime in the future, but right. You're not allowed to listen on the final, during the live final season.
Exciting.
So all that's coming up on our next podcast. Be sure to subscribe. robhasawebsite.com/iTunes for that, and to everybody who has come on recently as a new patron of Rob Has a Podcast, thank you so much. See, I don't go over the top with the patron stuff.
No, you're very restrained. I'm like shocked
very,
by
very
it.
Very restrained. robhasawebsite.com/patron if you like what you're hearing and you want to hear more about that stuff. robhasawebsite.com/patron. And then I'm off to Toronto on Tuesday.
Oh, that's coming right up. So there's the live know-it-alls?
Live know-it-alls. I'm going to do the live show with Steven on Wednesday night, and then we're going to do Big Brother Canada on Thursday night.
Awesome.
Did you follow Big Brother 18 all the way through?
Yeah. Wait, who? That was Nicole one?
Nicole one.
Yeah, it was a tough season.
I feel
season
like you watch it, but you don't like it.
Well, like the last season I loved was the last one that Dan was on. It was Dan and Ian.
Yeah, that's 14.
Yeah.
That's so like 5 years ago.
Yeah, I guess. Well, then I like, well, I think what turned me off actually was like the season after that, I wrote these like EW blogs about it.
Yes, I remember.
And it was like a profoundly depressing season where it was like
the racist
season. Yeah, everyone was saying racist stuff. Everyone was like bullying and lots of fighting and stuff. Yeah. So it just was not, I think having to, because writing those blogs, it seems like an easy thing, but you're like watching and rewatching a thing, and you're watching the show in a way that does not make you appreciate it. So
yeah,
I'm always eager to watch it, but I don't have the same level of fanaticism for it, certainly, as I do for Survivor.
Okay. Well, that's right around the corner, believe it or not. We're like 7 weeks away from Big Brother.
Ooh, I'm excited about Bachelor too. I'm
looking. You watch The Bachelor?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's one that's too far beyond me. I feel like that's too, I can't do it.
Yeah. That's fair. It's a very different beast.
Different beast. Yeah. All right. Well, Cochran, thank you so much. And take care, everybody. Have a good one. Bye.
Bye.